MacCast, Saturday, September 15th, 2012. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, I have a massive show for you today. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Those of you who have been listening to the show for a while know that when Apple has their big events, their big announcements, you know, there's the big rush by all the news organizations and stuff to get information out there, get stuff right up immediately. But then often after that, there is this period of sort of what I call fallout. There's all of the nitty-gritty, the good information that isn't just the stuff that Apple throws out in the keynote. We start to be able to analyze and look at things and answer a lot of questions that come out. Like, inevitably, we get in that haze, that post-keynote, like, everything is wonderful, reality distortion field haze, right? And we're all going, oh, this is so awesome, we love it. And then we start to, like, think about stuff. And what I like to do on this show is I like to take the time, step back. You know, we can all go to the blogs, we can all get that information, but what I like to do is step back and really get all of the details, all the information, sort of let it set in, sort of stew in it, saute in it, that sort of thing, and then find out on the other side, does this stuff really still taste good, or is it just all dried out and overdone? And this time around, I think we got a lot of good, tasty stuff to talk about. I'm very excited about all the announcements. Also, the iPhone 5 went on sale, so we're going to talk a little bit about how that whole process went, my buying process. I'd love to hear how things went for you, and we're going to talk to a couple of folks from the Mac community about, or the Apple community, about their experience as well and sort of buying decisions and stuff like that. Because I know a lot of you have questions about, you know, what should I buy? What model's the right one for me? Which carriers should I go with? How does all this LTE stuff work? And that's the kind of stuff that we're going to get into in this episode. So hang in there, stay tuned. It's going to be a long one. But before we get started, I do want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors. You know, you're going to be getting that new iPhone 5, and inevitably, you're going to be showing it off to your friends, showing them all the cool new features. You're going to hand it over to your buddy, Butterfingers Bob, and he accidentally drops it right onto your kitchen tile. Your beautiful new iPhone 5, after that moment of shock and awe and unfriending Bob and kicking him out of your house and telling him he could never come over again, you will calm down and you'll realize, you know what, I'm okay because I got a SquareTrade warranty. And SquareTrade is what I want to talk to you about. You know, they offer drop protection and spill protection for your iOS devices. A lot of people don't really think about it, but the replacement cost on your iOS device is not going to be typically the price that you paid for it when you bought it, because most of us are getting our devices on subsidies. So the carrier is footing the bill for a large portion of that cost. We're getting a two-year contract, and so we might pay the $199, $299, $399 for our device, but replacing it, should it get damaged through something that we do, that whoops moment that we all have, that could run us upwards of $650 to $850. So SquareTrade has your back in this respect. They have extended warranty coverage. It's going to cover drops. It's going to cover full immersion. So if it goes into the toilet, if it goes into your swimming pool, that is going to be covered. A lot of plans don't cover full immersion. They do. And it's very affordable. You know, one thing that people will sometimes buy is through your carrier, you can get coverage, but it's generally on a month-by-month basis, and you pay that for the full length of your contract. So it might only be $10 a month. It sounds really appealing, but the end of the two-year contract, you've paid $240 for that extended coverage for that two-year contract. SquareTrade offers 2 years of coverage for just $124 regularly, but if you use the MacCast link, go to squaretrade.com/MacCast, you can sign up now and get that coverage for just $99. So really good deal for that kind of protection. And as far as what happens if you do need to make a claim, hopefully you never need to use it, right? But you have it there. And if you do need to make a claim, they make it really easy. You can take it into the Apple Store. You can have them do the repair. And then you just send the information to SquareTrade. They'll process it and they'll cover the repair, or you can send it into them. It's really your choice. They make it really easy. And if you have other devices that you want covered, things like iPads, laptops, cameras, TVs, appliances, they cover that stuff too. So you can check it all out on their website, squaretrade.com/maccast. And a big thank you to them for their support of the show. And so let's talk about that new iPhone 5, huh? Amazing stuff. A lot of it was what we had sort of seen in the leaks and the rumors, but to me, still very exciting. Great new design, thinner, lighter, just better in every respect. We're going to get into all of the individual specifications. Actually, somebody asked me if I could really cover those sorts of things because they said, you know, not all of us watch this keynote, not all of us get that deep into it, and we like to hear about that stuff on the MacCast. So I know I've in the past kind of said you can go get that information elsewhere, but I'm happy to cover it. We'll run through it pretty quickly. Physical features on the device, 4.87 inches tall, 2.31 inches wide, just 0.3 inches thick. So just over a quarter of an inch thick. That gives you an idea of how thin this thing is. I can't wait to actually see it, to hold it in my hand. I've got mine on pre-order. I'm excited about that. It's also lighter, 3.95 ounces. All aluminum and glass. The back is actually a 6000 series anodized aluminum. It just looks gorgeous. I was very concerned sort of about that two-tone look with the glass and the metal. Looking at the anodized stuff, what I've seen on stage now and the images, I think, you know, most of the time it is pretty seamless in terms of the blending of those two materials. There's some shots where it seems like the anodized is more in that gray range, but I think that's more of a lighting thing. I'm really hoping that it just is, you know, gorgeous and seamless, and it sounds like the feel in your hand is going to be really nice. If you're wondering what that anodized aluminum is like, it's basically the same material that is in or on the MacBook Pro case. So if you're familiar with that, you're going to get a good idea of what it's going to look like, what it's going to feel like to the touch. The inlays, the fit and finish on this thing, I think is going to be superior to any other iPhone that Apple's made. And that to me is saying really a lot. I mean, my iPhone 4S and the iPhone 4 is a gorgeous piece of technology. The fit and finish on that is, you know, impeccable in most cases, and this sounds like it's going to be even better. The inlays at the top and bottom on the back of the device for the white model, they are a ceramic glass. That's the white and silver model. On the black model, it's a pigmented glass, and Apple is calling the anodized black material, the color for that, slate. So that's the black and slate model. The inlays are actually inset in an interesting way, or analyzed in an interesting way, so that they get the fit and finish just perfect. They actually take two high-res photos of the device using 29 megapixel cameras, and then there is a robot that has 725 unique inlays already pre-cut kind of sitting next to it. And so they quickly analyze those photos. And basically, it looks like what they're taking a picture of is the hole that the inlay is going to go in. It finds the perfect fit out of those 725. So it finds the one that's going to match most precisely and drops that in there. I've said in the little video that Apple produced that they're now measuring the accuracy of that fit in microns. So these things are going to be just smooth across the board. So that helps waylay some of my fears in terms of how seamless the two materials are going to kind of come together. And then the edge of the thing is diamond cut. It's got this beveled edge on it that just looks perfect. So I'm, again, can you tell I'm very excited about getting my hands on this thing? I think it's going to be unbelievable. The screen, obviously upgraded. It's taller, the 1136 by 640 pixels that we were expecting. 4 inches diagonally is still a Retina display at 326 pixels per inch. Big news on the display, though, is that it is going to now be full sRGB compatible in terms of the color saturation. So 44% more color saturation. This is like the iPad 2, which according to DisplayMate, who is a very reliable source for analyzing displays, they say that brings it into near perfect sRGB standard. So this could be almost like a reference monitor in terms of the color accuracy. And that's the same way it was on the iPad 2 and the new iPad. So it's going to be the most accurate color display in the industry. It's also 30% thinner. And the reason is that they are using that integrated touch technology that combines the display pixels and the touch layer pixels into a single plane. So amazing screen on this new device. I can't wait to get a look at that. The EyeSight camera has been upgraded a little bit, mainly in terms of how they are protecting it, what's covering it. In most respects, it's the same specifications as the iPhone 4S. So it's an 8 megapixel, 3,264 pixels by 2,448 pixel resolution, has the backside illumination, the hybrid IR filter, a 5-element lens that's an f2.4. It has been made thinner, so that is the one design change. In order to fit in that new slim design, they had to actually make the sensor, the whole unit, thinner. They said they now are using a precision micron-level lens alignment that is supposed to allow for better sharpness, and they added a new sapphire crystal lens cover. So they're actually using crystal to cover the lens rather than glass. It's harder and should be also clearer, resulting in crisper, I would assume brighter, better pictures. A lot of the improvements to the camera, though, are coming from the new chip that is in the iPhone 5, an A6 chip. We're going to get into those details in a minute. But basically, it has more signal processing, more image processing that it can do. Improvements there include faster signal processing, spatial noise reduction to help reduce noise that you get from those small sensors, dynamic pixel pinning to boost images captured in low light, so better low light performance, and smart filters to help reduce some of the noise. And what Apple means by smart is that it will sense when you have things that should have texture and not remove that. So it's going to remove noise where you need it, but leave textures and stuff in place. And I would imagine there's some amazing analysis of technology and real-time analysis of images and stuff like that going on with that smart filter. And another improvement is you can now take stills and video simultaneously. So I imagine this works very much like a lot of the handheld video cameras where you're shooting video, you'll have a little button on there that you can hit and snap a still at the same time and just continue on with your video. Let's talk a little bit about that new processor. So it did turn out to be what Apple is calling an A6 processor. Apple was really pretty mum, as they usually are, not giving too many details about specifically what architecture, what technology was in that chip. They did say during the keynote that it offers up to 2 times better graphics performance, 2 times better CPU performance, while being 22% smaller than the A5. So while Apple doesn't share chip specs, remember I mentioned at the top of the show that we get this analysis and there's a lot of people looking at this stuff? Well, a number of sites immediately started speculating, started digging, trying to figure out what was in this chip. Infinite Loop figured that Apple was doing some sort of new 32-nanometer design to get the chip actually smaller and shrink it down and give it the room that it would need. They figured likely wasn't a quad core, but possibly some sort of clocked up dual core based chip, something using newer technology. They were thinking, a lot of sites were thinking prior to the announcement, that Apple would be doing some sort of overclocked version of the ARM Cortex A9, but ARM also has an upcoming chip, the ARM Cortex A15 processor architecture, and that's supposed to be about 40% smaller and offer better performance on a clock by clock basis. So immediately there began the speculation that, oh, well, maybe this is going to be the first thing to come out with the A15 ARM ARM core. And that uses an high-K metal gate technology along with the 32-nanometer design, so it seemed logical that that's what would be going on. It's also based on Samsung's Xenios 5250 design, which offers up to 2 gigahertz performance, but most people were thinking, well, it's likely clocked down from that for battery and heat reasons. And with the 40% jump in clock-for-clock speed, you could probably get away with about a 1.2 gigahertz ARM A15-based processor and achieve the sort of 2x performance that Apple was claiming. And so while many of us in the tech community and a lot of us geeks really wanted to see a quad-core processor in there because some of Apple's competitors are moving to a quad-core, there were a lot of sites making the case that it's likely a dual-core and there would be good reason for Apple to stick with a dual-core because most of the apps that are in the App Store, things that developers have built, have been optimized for a two-core architecture. And going to quad-core, you'd have to rewrite some of the software to actually take advantage of those extra cores. So in sticking with dual core and just upping the performance gains, Apple really gains a lot and makes it a lot easier on developers. So how would you achieve that kind of performance with two cores? Well, Inantek started doing their analysis and they are a great source for this stuff. I mean, these guys are experts in chip stuff, so they really know what's going on. Their initial speculation was that, well, maybe that what they're doing is they're doing two dual core A15s squeezed into that single A6 chip. So while that effectively results in 4 cores inside that A6 processor, it's not technically a quad core. And actually, that architecture might have a better advantage for Apple because, once again, it's going to maintain compatibility with the current dual core apps and could help maintain the battery life specs that Apple would be looking for. A lot of this speculation was based on the fact that to date, Apple has always licensed ARM technology for their cores for use in building their custom silicon. But then late on Saturday, Inantek got some new information, and it turns out the whole thing could be a whole lot cooler because they now believe that this core could be a core that's designed by Apple and built for Apple, something that's based on the ARM V7 design, to be specific. And immediately when I heard that, I thought, well, wait a minute. We've got A8, A9, A15. Is this ARM 7? No, it's not ARM 7. What they're talking about is there's actually two different kinds of technologies that ARM licenses. They license processor core technology to manufacturers like Apple for use in things like the A5. So that's where you hear, you know, it's based on an ARM A8 Cortex or A9 Cortex processor or core. They license that stuff, and then they also license instruction set architectures for custom implementations. So this is things like the ARM V7 ISA, and that's what they're thinking that Apple has adapted for this new chip. But in terms of how the core is designed, this is Apple engineering doing their custom core stuff, and this is likely a result of years of efforts and work from the folks and the engineers and the people that Apple acquired when they purchased PA Semi back in 2008. And Inantek had had some word that Apple had been working on some designs but was having trouble getting them actually working. They weren't really sure that Apple was going to have a chip ready to go, something that they custom built, but now it's looking like that is likely what this A6 is. And so they have no idea at this point how many cores are in there, what kind of clock speeds that Apple is using, but the assumption is, at least for now, that it's still some sort of dual core, two core design. And then on the GPU side, Inantek is guessing that Apple is using a higher clocked version of the PowerVR SGX 543 MP3 chipset. So all that crammed into this new A6 design that is fully Apple's deal. So if this turns out to be true, it's going to be very cool. And I hope it does. We'll know in about a week when the phones are out there and the folks like Chipworks start, you know, throwing their x-ray machines at it and really analyzing how this thing is built and kind of reverse engineering it a little bit and letting us peek under the hood. But right now, things are looking pretty certain that this is Apple's design and they did it all themselves this time around. The other spec that a lot of people were wondering about is how much RAM is in the chip. Apple doesn't talk about those sorts of things, but again, Anantech thinks that it's doubled up from 512 to 1 gigabyte, which would make sense. And as far as why Apple doesn't throw out these specifications or really reveal these sorts of things, we can only speculate on why, but I think it's really smart that they don't play that marketing game, that name game, because in a lot of ways, it's like going back to the old megahertz myth or the megapixel myth that we have with cameras. And it gets us in this game that, you know, number of cores as a specification means something, or that, you know, more cores is better. And it's really just a tool in my mind to trick people into thinking that, hey, more is better. Bigger number is always better. If it has 4 cores, it's got to be better than 2 cores. Or if it has 8 cores, it's got to be better than 4. And that's just not always the case. Apple is in a unique position that they have control of the hardware, they have control of the software, so they can balance those two things to get the best power versus performance out of both. And they don't have to worry about, you know, having to ramp up CPU cycles just to overcome inefficiencies with software or the operating system. They can go back to the operating system and tweak it and make it run perfectly on the silicon in the hardware architecture that they've built. And especially when they are all the way down into the core chip design, they can really start tweaking things and find that sweet spot, that balance of battery life, performance, and usability. I mean, it really comes down to the experience. And from everything I'm hearing from the people who were hands-on with this thing, everything is flowing smoothly and perfectly. Game developers, they had a couple game demos during the keynote that were just amazing. People are really able to do a lot with this chip. So does it really matter 4 cores or 2 cores? We don't really care at the end of the day. We just want our apps to run and look great. And this chip is certainly going to deliver on that promise. Other big news coming out on the hardware side in the new iPhone, the new dock connector, the Lightning connector, Apple is calling it. It is an 8-pin orientation-free connector, so you don't have to worry about which way you're plugging it in. You just plug it into your device. Super small, allowing Apple to slim down the size of the iPhone, slim down the size of their iPods. If you do need to have it work with older accessories, they're going to have 3 different adapters. It's not going to work for everything, though. More on that in a second. But they're offering 3 different adapters, at least at launch. The Lightning to 30-pin adapter, which is going to be $29 US. There's going to be an 8-inch Lightning to 30-pin female cable. So if you need to get to a device that you can't go, you know, direct through just the adapter, you need a little bit more room, you can get a cable. That's going to be $39. And then over in the EU, to meet some requirements you have over there for everything being able to be charged on a micro USB, they're going to have the Lightning to micro USB adapter. And I really want to get one of the Lightning to micro USB adapters. Those look really nice. The Lightning to 30-pin, what a horsey adapter. I mean, that thing is massive. It just looks really silly. So I'd prefer just to use a micro USB cable. I'm assuming that you can do all of the, you know, syncing, and it's not just a charging cable, but maybe I'm wrong on that. So if anybody in the EU wants to send me over one of those, that would be awesome. Not that I'm asking, but I am. Anyway, there was also some confusion during the launch of the iPhone when it went on sale, because it seemed like there was this upsell message during checkout that made it sound like a Lightning to 30-pin adapter was being included with the iPhone 5. It's not. It doesn't come in the box. You're going to have to buy it separately. So if you're going to need that, you probably want to grab one if you can. I think they were sold out. Hopefully they'll have them at the Apple stores on launch day next week, but we'll have to see. You know, in a lot of applications, though, you may not need it. So much of the stuff is wireless now on the iPhone, where you can, you know, do AirPlay for audio stuff. You have other options. You can do syncing over the air. So there's, I think, only some specific applications where you're really going to need that adapter and not be able to just use the cable that comes in the box. The other thing to note about the adapters is they don't support all of the old features of the old 30-pin cable. Specifically, they don't support the video or iPod out features. So that could mean that some older speaker docks, even if you got the adapter, aren't going to work. So you're probably going to want to do your research if you have an older like iHome or some sort of older speaker thing that you were hoping to dock into. You're going to want to check and make sure that it's not using the video or the iPod out. Those are basically the analog connections. You need the Lightning connector is pure digital, so it only supports digital connections and not that old analog stuff. Apple, on the video side, has said they are going to have adapters to take Lightning to VGA and Lightning to HDMI. So those are planned. They're not available right now. Again, though, for like doing presentations and stuff like that, connecting into projectors, what I've started to do, and I actually prefer, is to use the Reflection app and then just connect my Mac with the mini display port to the projector and use my Mac as the way to present my iPhone or my iPad screen. And that all happens over, you know, the wireless connection. So really, more and more these days, I'm seeing less and less uses for an actual physical cable. But if you need that stuff, Apple is going to have it available for you. And the cable does appear to be a USB 2 cable and not a USB 3. A lot of folks were hoping that we'd have faster syncing using USB 3. It sounds like it's just going to be USB 2. On the USB side, though, it does sound like, at least according to Mac Takahara, they believe that the Lightning cable will be capable of doing the USB hosting, which is, that's the feature like you have with the USB camera connection kit, where you can connect other USB devices like keyboards, mics, speakers, and MIDI connected devices and have them work through the Lightning connector. So that'll be cool if that is supported. And it was, you know, with the current generation of iPhones. So hopefully Lightning's still going to support that. I don't know if how you would actually adapt that yet, because they're not going to have the cables. I don't think they've announced anything like the camera connection kit for Lightning, but I would expect those accessories to come out sometime in the future. On the wireless side, it does, as predicted, support LTE. So this is Apple's first LTE iPhone. Also, UMTS, HSPA+, dual channel HSDPA, GSM and Edge, CDMA, EVDO, Revision A, and Revision B. So all of the wireless technologies are pretty much covered. A bunch of different frequencies. They have information on the specific frequencies and stuff on Apple's website, so I won't bore you with that sort of thing. But just know it's going to work, you know, globally on tons of carriers. I mean, it's supported across the board. It is a global, you know, what they call a world chip. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you can just take one device and put it on every carrier network. There's actually different models still, unfortunately, for AT&T versus Sprint and Verizon. There's also a separate model for Europe and China and Asia and stuff like that. So you're going to have to get the right device for your region, but they do have the different channels supported, and there's some indication, or it seems like you're going to be able to, with an unlocked device, take it between different countries. I'll talk a little bit about that, at least what I've been able to suss out about that here in a minute. On the Wi-Fi side of things, 802.11abgn. On the N side, they are now supporting both 2.4 gigahertz and the 5 gigahertz frequencies. So it is Apple's first dual band iPhone. And of course, they've got Bluetooth 4.0 wireless technology. That's the stuff that allows you to do the lower power Bluetooth, which is good for battery life on the device. And I think we're going to be seeing a lot more accessories that are supporting the low power version of Bluetooth to help with battery life. So wireless, you're totally covered, all your bases over there. Something Apple talked about a little bit that they really brushed over that I want to mention. The new iPhone 5 is going to have support on the voice side of your wireless connection, of your cellular connection, for something called wideband audio. And that's supposed to allow for better voice calls. It's also, I guess, known as HD voice. The thing about it is that it requires carrier support. And according to Cult of Mac, they say that no U.S. carriers are actually supporting it. And there's some indications that they actually never will. The reason being is that it requires a change to the codecs that are used for voice calls, and the GSM providers right now are super busy building out their LTE networks, and they're very likely not going to stop to kind of change over their codecs. On the CDMA side, the providers would use a codec that actually isn't supported on the iPhone 5. So you'd only be able to have it on your GSM carriers, and most of those are probably not going to support it. And Sprint even came out officially and said that they won't be supporting it, at least according to a report over on MacNN. So while it's in there, in the US at least, it sounds like we're not going to get it. I don't know yet about Europe, Asia, some of the other countries, and whether or not they'll be able to support that wideband audio for better sounding voice calls. And if you're trying to decide, you know, which carrier you want to go with, and the ability to use data and voice simultaneously matters to you, 9to5 was able to confirm that the CDMA version of the iPhone 5 on Verizon still will not support simultaneous voice and data on LTE, or it actually just won't support simultaneous voice and data at all. The reason, though, is because Apple says it's not actually possible to support simultaneous voice and data on networks that use CDMA for voice and LTE for data using a single radio design. They'd have to actually add in a third antenna, and it sounds like they didn't want to do that for the iPhone 5. Probably space is a consideration here, I would imagine. Now, it sounds like LTE can, or at least will be capable of carrying voice and data on a single connection using a single chip or a single radio, but currently the iPhone 5 doesn't support that. So we might have to wait for a new iPhone for that before that's actually supported over LTE. And because Sprint uses the same LTE iPhone, it's assumed that they're not going to be able to support voice and data over the CDMA network. Now, before you decide, well, then AT&T is better, let me tell you this. The reason voice and data will still continue to work on AT&T is because you can fall back to the GSM network, which does support it. So if you're running LTE for your data and then you need to get a voice call, you can drop back down to GSM, get GSM speeds for data and voice as you're having that call, and then when you're done, ramp back up to the LTE for your data. Because once again, the chip in the iPhone or the design in the iPhone is not going to support simultaneous voice and data over LTE, at least from the information that I was able to gather this past week. So just something to note there. As far as pricing and availability goes, well, it is on sale now, or had gone on sale. There are longer lead times. Apple has sold out of their initial quantities. Most of the carriers, I think, have sold out of their initial launch day quantities. So if you order online now, you're going to be waiting anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks. I think last time I had checked, that's where things were falling, at least in the U.S., 16-gigabyte model is going to be $199, $299 for the 32-gigabyte model, and $399 for the 64-gigabyte. This is U.S. pricing with a 2-year contract on a supported carrier. Again, those carriers in the U.S. are AT&T, Verizon, and Sprint, a bunch of other international carriers, and pricing is going to vary dependent upon where you buy it outside of the U.S., so you're going to want to check in your region for the specifics. Unlocked pricing wasn't yet available for the U.S., but it's assumed that it's going to match the 4S, so you're likely looking at $649 for a 16-gigabyte model, $749 for a 32-gigabyte model, and $849 for a 64-gigabyte model, and this information was stated by TechCrunch. It also seems to be supported by some of the pricing that's listed on AT&T's website for an off-contract but not unlocked device. And apparently, unlocked iPhones, if you're in Canada, are not going to be sold in stores. They're only sold online, and I guess that's to avoid some sort of scalping scam that tends to happen when they launch these new devices. So that's according to iMore. If you want to keep your unlimited data and you're on Verizon, you're going to be forced to buy an unlocked device. They are not going to let you buy a subsidized device without switching over to one of their new Share Everything plans. So if you're one of those people who got grandfathered in, Verizon had unlimited plans available, I think, just for a really short window. But if you're grandfathered in on that, just be aware you are going to have to buy an unlocked device if you want to keep that. AT&T, if you want to use the new FaceTime over cellular feature, which is part of iOS 6 and supported on the new iPhone 5, if you want to use that, you're going to have to switch to one of their mobile share plans. It's the only plan that they're offering FaceTime over cellular. Verizon and Sprint will allow you to do FaceTime over cellular if you want. So if that's a big consideration for you, you might consider one of those carriers. AT&T customers on the unlimited data plans, if you're one of the people like myself who's grandfathered in on that, you actually can and do get to keep your unlimited data plan if you stick with AT&T. And things might even actually get better because I'm hearing some rumors. I've seen some things that are saying the throttling cap that you will get to on your unlimited plan is going to go up from the 3 gigabytes to 5 gigabytes. So you'll be able to use more data before you get that nasty gram from AT&T saying that they're going to throttle your connection for a month. So I guess that's positive move forward. I still hate all this carrier stuff. I think they're nickel and diming us to death, at least here in the States. I know some other countries, there's similar kind of shenanigans going on. And it's just completely infuriating and frustrating. But a lot of people have been asking me, you know, sort of what's the best plan if I'm an international traveler, if I'm moving between the U.S. and, say, Europe or Asia, something like that. From all of the research that I've been doing and the reports that I've been reading, it sounds like if you're an international traveler, your best choice for the new iPhone 5 is going to be to go with Verizon in the States. One of the main reasons being is that you can get it subsidized on contract, and then after 60 days, if you've been paying your bill and your account is in good standing, they will unlock that for you. So then when you travel overseas, you can use GSM data networks and get a local prepaid SIM and just pop that into your Verizon iPhone and use the network over there. They also seem like they might have the best chance for LTE network compatibility in Europe and Asia, although that's not 100% confirmed yet. But once you have the unlocked device, I think overseas you'll be able to use GSM networks with data no problem on a prepaid local SIM. And the reason why it might work best with LTE networks in Europe is the Verizon phone, at least according to the specs, seems to support LTE 1, which is in the 2100 megahertz range, LTE 3 in the 1800 megahertz range, and LTE 5 in the 850 megahertz band. And those are the same ones that seem to be supported on the GSM iPhone that's going to be sold in Germany, the UK, Australia, Japan, Hong Kong, Korea, and Singapore. So 1, 3, and 5 are the bands that are supported there. They're also the bands that are supported on the Verizon iPhone in the US and Japan, but not Canada. AT&T has GSM and LTE models, but the LTE bands that they're using are apparently band 4 and band 17, and that's in the US and Canada. So that leads me to believe that the Verizon iPhone, if you're going to be able to get LTE support internationally, is going to be your best choice. I don't have confirmation of that yet, though, so don't quote me on that. And as a matter of fact, when I was digging into the nitty-gritty on Apple's website, they do have a warning in the fine print at the bottom that says, band support does not guarantee support on all LTE networks running on the same bands. So they seem to be specifically calling out that just because you have a device that says it supports band 1 in the US doesn't necessarily mean it's going to support band 1 somewhere else. And I don't know if that's a carrier thing. I don't know if that's a technical limitation thing of LTE. What's frustrating to me is that I thought LTE was supposed to do away with all this garbage, that we were supposed to have one technology, LTE, that was used everywhere and ubiquitous, and it's sounding like that's far from the case. So I think we were sold a bill of goods on that one. I don't know. This is just nuts. Availability on the iPhone, though, on launch day, the 21st September, 8 a.m. local time, Apple is going to be shipping phones to stores. You're going to be able to buy them in the U.S., Canada, the U.K., France, Germany, Australia, Japan, Hong Kong, and Singapore, all on the same day. So this is the most aggressive international rollout for an iPhone that Apple has ever done. They're going to follow it up immediately the next week with a rollout in 22 more countries. This is on September 28th. So if you're in Belgium, the Czech Republic, Denmark, Estonia, Finland, Hungary, Ireland, Italy, Liechtenstein, Lithuania, Luxembourg, Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, Poland, Portugal, Slovakia, Spain, Sweden, and Switzerland, you're getting the iPhone a week after those other countries, after the original launch date. And then Apple plans to have availability of the iPhone 5 in 100 countries by the end of the year. They're also discontinuing the iPhone 3GS. And the reason for that is Apple bumped the iPhone 4 down to being free with a two-year contract. That's an 8-gigabyte model. And they're also continuing to sell the iPhone 4S, the 16-gigabyte model, at $99 with a two-year contract. So Apple really opened up the range of phones and devices that they're going to have at all different price points. So you can get everything from free with an iPhone 4 all the way up through the big 64-gigabyte iPhone 5 at $399 with a two-year contract. So covering all the bases. And that's the iPhone. Now, Apple spent about an hour detailing the iPhone at the launch event, and then it was sort of like they retooled, they rejiggered. I saw a couple of reports, and I thought this was fairly accurate, that it almost seemed like it was really two keynotes back-to-back. So they did the whole iPhone thing, and then they kind of reset, and then they did their standard, as they've always done in the fall, music event, where they covered the iPods and iTunes and things like that. And so they announced new iPod Touches, the fifth generation of the iPod Touch, very similar. It's probably the closest the iPod Touch has ever come to matching the features and specifications of the iPhone. It's using exactly the same display as the iPhone 5. So you've got the Retina display, the taller 4-inch display, 1136 by 640 pixels, 326 PPI, all the same single layer touch technology and LCD, updated color gamut. I don't know what else to say. It's the same across the board, right? We can run through the specs again, but we really don't need to. They also updated the processor in the iPod to a dual core A5 processor, and they did state that it was dual core this time around. I think mainly because the A5 specs are already pretty well known, and so they can say those without giving up anything. Dual core graphics on that, up to 7 times faster, so that's going to be a great boon for gaming. You can now do iPhoto and those higher end apps on the iPod Touch. It is super thin. Again, this one's actually under a 1/4 inch thick, so just 0.24 inches or 6 millimeters thin. 4.86 inches high by 2.31 inches tall, so that taller form factor, and it weighs 3.1 ounces or 88 grams. It comes in different colors: black, silver, pink, blue, yellow, and red. It has the same beveled edge as the iPhone, that beautiful sort of diamond-cut beveled edge. The things just look amazing. Also, the same metal aluminum material, so that anodized aluminum case, the same material, again, that's used in the MacBook Pro. So I would imagine it's going to feel awesome in your hand. And they added something they're calling the iPod Touch Loop, which is basically a leather strap, or it wasn't really clear if it was a leather strap or a faux leather strap, that you can now attach to a little button that is on the back of the device. And that button was completely flush, so I was really curious when they were showing it off, how do you actually attach this little leather strap, which just sort of looks like it slips over. And it turns out that little button is actually spring-loaded, so you press it, it pops up a little bit, and then you can attach the iPod Touch Loop. And that allows you, when you're using the camera, to have a strap, when you're using the device, to have a strap so that if you drop it, you know, it's not going to fall and smash. Something they may consider at some point, I would imagine, adding to the iPhone, but probably not as convenient as it would be with a music player. On the wireless side, again, matching the specs in a lot of ways of the new iPhone, has wireless 802.11 A, B, G, and N. And on the N side, they are again supporting the 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz dual band, Bluetooth 4.0, low power Bluetooth, and it has the Nike Plus support built in. So you can be able to do all your Nike Plus exercise stuff without having to have any extra dongles or adapters or anything like that. The new iPod Touch supports AirPlay mirroring, which is pretty exciting. So you'll be able to do all the same sorts of AirPlay mirroring things that you can do with your iPhone and your iPad. So again, that's going to be really nice for gaming if you want to send your video to, say, your Apple TV so you can watch it up there on a big screen. Cameras. The iPod Touch has awesome, awesome cameras, finally. 5-megapixel EyeSight camera, the 5-element lens, LED flash. So you have not only a camera, but also a camera with flash, which is new. That 2.4 aperture, it's going to do 1080p HD video recording. On the front, they've upgraded the FaceTime camera to the FaceTime HD camera. That's a 1.2-megapixel 720p camera, and they're using the sapphire crystal lens cover for the camera on the back. So again, note that all of these specs, or a lot of these specs, are identical to what Apple has launched on the iPhone 5. Now, the one thing about the EyeSight camera on the iPod Touch is that it does stick out a little bit from the bottom case, because I think they're using the same sensor that they were using in the iPhone 4, so it's not thinner, it's not squished down like the one they redesigned for the iPhone 5, so it just sticks out just a hair. I'm not sure how I feel about that from a design perspective. I'll have to see it in person before I make judgment, but it looks a little weird in some of the side profile shots, because the touch is so thin, and then you see this little camera bump kind of sticking out. I don't know how I feel about that. Also has the lightning connector. I mean, in order to get it that thin, they had to go with the new connector almost. So across the board, Apple is showing that lightning is going to be the new way to hook up our iPods and iPhones, and I would imagine the next generation of iPad is going to have the lightning connector as well. That may be the iPad mini we might hear about in a couple weeks. Battery life has been increased, 40 hours of music playback and 8 hours of video playback. And big news, when iOS 6 comes out along with the new iPod Touch, it is going to have support for Siri. So you're finally going to be able to use Siri on your iPod Touch. And pricing and availability, it's going to be available in October. They have a 32 gigabyte model for $299 and a 64 gigabyte model for $399. Again, this is US pricing. And they are going to continue to sell the fourth generation iPod Touch. They've dropped the price of those, upped the capacities. So you have a 16 gigabyte model for $199 and a 32 gigabyte model for $249. So I don't know, you know, on the 32 gigabytes, for just $50 more, you can get the new iPod Touch. So I'm not really sure why Apple's keeping that one in the lineup, but there it is. It's available if you want it. So that's the new iPod Touch. Apple also, as expected, announced new iPod Nanos, the 7th generation iPod Nano. The one comment that everybody's saying across the board, because Apple changed the design, they went back to that sort of taller form factor. Apple seems to be completely schizophrenic about the iPod Nano. They just, on a whim, hey, we're going to do a new shape, we're going to do a new design. But this one actually turns out to make a lot of sense and is really, really nice. The new Nano is super light, it's super thin, it's actually 40% thinner, if you can believe that. It's 3.1 inches tall, 1.56 inches wide, and just 0.21 inches or 5.4 millimeters thin. I mean, it's just like wafer thin, and weighs just over an ounce, 1.1 ounces. It has a 2.5 inch multi-touch display, so a very big display for a Nano. As a matter of fact, I think Apple said it's the biggest display they've ever put on a Nano, and has a physical home button. The dimensions, the pixel dimensions of the screen are 240 by 432 pixels. And that's a pixel density of 202 pixels per inch, if you want to do the math on that one. Actually has physical volume buttons on the side. So you've got touchscreen, you've got a physical home button, you've got physical volume buttons. Does use the new lightning connector. As I said, they're moving to that, it seems like, across the board with all of their devices. Support for video playback. So video is now back in the Nano. The supported playback resolution is 720 by 576 pixels running at 30 frames a second. Does seem to be 720p. I'm not sure how that's going to work with videos that you've recorded, though, say on your new iPhone 5 or your iPod Touch. They may likely have to be converted so that they can actually be played back on the iPod Nano. I'm assuming that the SD stuff and the HD stuff that's downloaded from the iTunes store in terms of movies and TV shows and stuff like that is going to be able to be played back just fine. But 1080p stuff that you've recorded is going to probably have to be converted down so that you can get it onto your new iPod Nano. The iPod Nano now does also have support for low power Bluetooth, so that's going to be great if you want to connect it to Bluetooth speakers or, more importantly, Bluetooth headphones. It has the FM radio in there with the live pause feature, so you can pause FM radio and come back to it. It'll just buffer up. Nike Plus the pedometer is built in, so if you want to use it for exercising, it's going to be a great device for that. It doesn't have an integrated speaker like the 5th generation Nano did, but the 6th generation Nano didn't have a speaker, so really not a huge change there. It's just if you want to watch movies, you are going to have to plug in headphones. White on the front, except for the black design. So it does come in colors, black, silver, purple, yellow, blue, green, pink, and red. Every model except the black one has this sort of white frame on the front. I'm not sure how I feel about that. It really seems to me like they are teeny bopper in terms of the colored ones. They look very much targeted at maybe the 15-year-old girl market. You know, I don't want to stereotype anyone, but to me that does seem like what they look like. And the touch interface is not iOS. It's I'm assuming a custom iPod OS with touch support, actually multi-touch support. The icons are actually round. Again, I'm not sure how I feel about that. They look very much like the little international icons that Apple uses for the iTunes store. So those round kind of icons. I prefer the square ones, but that's just me. Longer battery life, up to 30 hours of music playback, and they have just one size, a 16 gigabyte model. It's going to be $149 US and will be available in October. They're taking pre-orders now. Again, I think they've kind of sold out of the initial allotments, though, because I think ship times have pushed back a little bit. So, new Nano looks very, very nice. There seems to be a lot of excitement with the folks who were actually at the event and able to play around with the Nano, almost just to a certain degree, more excitement around the new Nano than the iPhone, depending upon which report you look at, which is surprising, but it looks like a really cool device. So I'm going to have to get into the Apple Store and play around with one. I'll probably end up walking out with one. That's my only fear. I sometimes worry about going to the Apple Store after these new products come out, because I'm just going to want one, right? And my wallet, actually now my iPhone, is just going to pop out and I'm going to scan it right there and walk out with the Apple's built-in app. But I think that's what they want us to do. So those are all the new Nanos. Now, the other big thing on the music side in terms of hardware that Apple announced is that they completely have redone their earbuds. They actually said they've been spending 3 years in research and development and design on these new things that they're calling EarPods. And they are going to ship with the new iPods, the new iPod Touch, iPhones, actually every iOS device except the iPod Shuffle. Well, actually, they didn't say anything about the iPads at this point, but I'm assuming with a new iPad, you're going to get the new EarPods and not just Apple's old-style earbuds. And the whole genesis for this, the whole reason for this, according to Apple, was that, you know, they have so many devices out there with speakers, with headphones. You know, the earbuds are basically little speakers, and they really wanted to have something that sounds better, that fits better for their customers, and it sounds like they spent a heck of a lot of time trying to figure it out. So early reports are that they did a pretty good job, that these are way better sounding and way more comfortable than what Apple has currently been shipping. They're at the price point that they're at are obviously, and considering that they're included with every device, they're not going to be revolutionary when compared against really high-end audiophile style earphones and earbuds. But for most people, and you know, most people, that's those are the headphones that they use. The ones that they get with the device, those are the ones that they use. So for a lot of people, these are just going to be better. They're going to sound better. They're still hard plastic, but Apple reportedly did hundreds of 3D ear scans and tried to find some sort of common volume, some sort of common shape design. They are not sealed, so it's not the kind of thing where it form fits into your ear. They still just set inside your ear, but they're designed to focus the sound and point it in a way where it should go right down the ear canal and should work in terms of a fit for most people. There's also all of these additional ports on them that Apple says helps optimize a lot of the acoustics. So there's a little port on the back that's supposedly supposed to help adjust the mid-range levels. There's little ports in the stems that allow for better airflow and better speaker movement, which is supposed to result in better bass. Apple actually did a whole video that's available on their website if you want to see what they have to say about it. But the new earbuds also have and continue to have the inline controls for doing volume up and volume down and skip forward and back. They also have the mic built in, and they will work with all of the iPads, the iPhone 3GS and up, the iPod Classic, and the iPod Nano 4th generation and up, along with 3rd generation iPod Shuffle or better. Why they wouldn't work with older models, considering they're just headphones, I'm assuming it has to do with the controls. So you could get these on an older device, and I would imagine that the sound works just fine because it's just a standard, you know, mini, 1/8-inch mini connector. But if you want the controls to work, you have to have one of those models of the iPod. And when you buy them, they'll also come with a little carrying case that looks really handy. And as far as price point goes and availability, they're available now, and they're $29 US. But once again, if you buy a new iPod or you're buying a new iPhone, you're going to get a set of these in the box anyway. So they're going to be the default shipping earbuds, it sounds like, moving forward. So that was it in terms of the hardware, new iPods, new iPhone. Software side of things, iOS 6 is coming in October. They showed off a lot of the same things that we had kind of already seen. Some of the bigger new features that they talked about were FaceTime over cellular. So that's going to be supported by all U.S. phone carriers and on all devices that will support FaceTime. AT&T, though, as I mentioned earlier, is going to require that you move to one of their new mobile shared data plans if you want to be able to access FaceTime over cellular. On the camera, they have this new panorama camera mode. We had kind of heard about it before the event, but they showed that off a little bit. It's going to be supported on the iPhone 4S and the 5th generation iPod Touch, along with the new iPhone 5. And it's accessed under the options in the camera app. So you go into the camera app, you go into options, and you'll have this new panorama feature. And basically, you just hold your phone out, you sweep it across the area. I think it's a 270-degree panorama, so it doesn't do full 360, but at least according to what it looked like in the demo, the key to this is going to be the software and the image processing. And I have a feeling Apple's really leveraging the power of the A5 and A6 chips to make this happen, because the stitching looks like it's going to be incredible. And that's usually where most panorama apps, if you ask me, kind of fall apart. Apple also has this ability to, it sounds like, match up even if you're a little shaky as you're taking the scan. The software is going to compensate for that and handle that a little bit better than maybe some other applications that are out there. So the panoramas look really nice. They showed off a little bit more surrounding maps, especially the new 3D mapping that they're doing. They've added more cities for, Apple calls that flyover. You kind of get this three-quarter view, and then you can use multi-touch gestures to spin around and change your angle of elevation and stuff like that. But basically, you can fly through all these different cities like San Francisco or Chicago or New York or something like that and see the actual buildings. And they've done it really beautifully. The flyover stuff just looks gorgeous. It's really an amazing demo. So if you want to sell someone an iPhone 5, if they're on the fence about getting an iPhone, show them the new maps when iOS 6 comes out, and they'll probably run out right at that moment and buy one of these things. There's a new icon for activating that functionality. It used to, I think, just say 3D. Now it's these little 3D buildings. You tap on those and it will go into the flyover mode. They've upped and improved the rendering of shrubs and trees that are in there. So those are going to look very realistic, I would imagine. Also, they, unlike Google, don't just blur out cars that are on the streets. It looks like they leave little residual, what people are calling ghost images. So it really kind of cleans up the look of everything as you're doing flyover, because all the city streets look like they're pretty much empty. But you can see little cars there if you look really, really closely, and that's the little ghosting that they're doing. Buildings just sort of fade away from view as you pass through them. So as you're watching the demo, you can see when they're zooming in are going through a flyover and flying through a big tall building. It just kind of gracefully fades out, gets out of the way so that you can see what's going on in the ground. And Maps is also going to offer up turn-by-turn directions, which is a big new feature that a lot of people are very excited about. And as far as I know, that is powered by the TomTom technology, so it should be very good. Also, it leverages some of the Waze crowdsourcing traffic information. So if you need to get routed around or moved around traffic or see what's going on with traffic, it's going to have that stuff built in as well as you're doing the whole turn-by-turn thing. I mentioned the camera app having the new panorama feature. Another thing they're going to have on the photo side is photo stream sharing. So you can now selectively share photos with a group of friends directly from your device. I think you can do it either privately or you can do it publicly. You can, you know, put it up on a website that you can just send someone a link to and they'll get access to. Your friends who have subscribed to your shared photo streams can also leave comments on those photos. So that's kind of a cool new feature, and it'll be interesting to see how that's implemented. It looks like it's implemented through the camera application, so you'll be able to go in there, see the photos that you've shared out to your shared photo streams, and then see any comments that people may have added. I would hope and assume also that there would be push notifications for that sort of thing. The other one little feature that they showed off in software is an update to the mail application. It now has support for VIPs. That was something that was added to mail and Mountain Lion. So you'll be able to put certain people in the VIPs group, and any messages that come into there, you can have separate and special notifications. You also have a centralized inbox that'll just show you all of the email from your VIPs, regardless of which email address they sent it to you at. So it'll just kind of aggregate those sorts of things. And also they showed off Passbook. That's the new application that Apple is adding in iOS 6 for managing your tickets and your boarding passes, any of your prepaid gift cards or loyalty cards. You'll be able to have all of those things inside Passbook, and it's location aware. So if you get to a place where you can use, say, one of your loyalty cards or a rewards card, it will just automatically know that you're in that store and sort of pop it up onto your home screen, and you'll be able to use whatever coupon or discount or loyalty card you need to use at that moment. So that looks like a really nice feature. And I would imagine this is something that Apple is going to take, get a lot of feedback on, and then leverage possibly into something that would act as a payment system for different retailers and stuff like that. So a lot of people had been asking about, you know, or speculating that Apple was going to possibly do some sort of NFC near field communication payment system. But I think they're looking at that and deciding, you know, there's not a lot of traction on that, at least in the US. I don't know how it's doing internationally. I think some of you have near field communication stuff, but honestly, are a lot of people using it, or is it just one of these things that is hyped up technology that people think we're going to use, but no one actually ever really uses because there's just too many differences and different ways to do it and different providers of it that it just makes it really impractical? Because, right, the goal of all of this is that you only have to carry one device, and if you need to make a payment, you just wave that device over an area and you make a payment wherever you need to do it. So I think Apple's seeing that that promise isn't really becoming a reality, and so they're choosing to go their own route. And we'll have to see what happens on that front. But Passbook seems to be a first foray into that sort of area, but albeit, I think, a much safer one. And so those are some of the new things that they showed off in iOS 6. iOS 6 is going to be available in October. I think they just actually released the Gold Master version to developers. So we're getting very close to having iOS 6. And it's going to be supported on devices all the way back to the iPhone 3GS. So there's a broad range of devices that are going to support iOS 6. Not all features are going to be supported, but it's good to see that Apple's at least going that far back. And of course, since this was, you know, this sort of back half of the announcements, at least, was really Apple's music event, they also announced that they're going to have a brand new version of iTunes, iTunes 11. One of the things that they noted was that 66% now of downloads from the music store, from the iTunes store, come directly from iOS devices. So people aren't really using their Macs as much anymore. So they kind of retooled all of those applications for iOS, and then threw on top of that for the Macs a brand new version of iTunes. And this new version of iTunes on the Mac has this edge-to-edge design. So this sort of three-column or three-panel thing that we're used to has gone away. You just got one big giant panel, and then clicking on different things open up and expose different areas. So for example, when you're browsing an album view, clicking on an album expands down very iOS folder style like to expose additional track information and details about the specific tracks related to that album. Also in that area, Apple added something they're calling the In the Store feature, which means that when you select an album or a track or something like that, you can get additional information, say for like an artist, on other albums that might be available in the iTunes store, all without leaving the main interface. So these panels kind of slide over and reveal additional information depending upon where you're clicking. It actually looks pretty slick. If it works as well as they demoed it, I'm kind of excited to see what's going on with iTunes 11. It seems like iTunes doesn't get all that much love from Apple, and it's nice to see that, you know, they've really worked out something. It remains to be seen whether or not it'll be better than what we currently have, but hopefully at the very least it'll be faster. And again, from the demos that I saw, it looks like it's going to be a really nice update to iTunes. They're doing some cool stuff too with integrating information from the artists. They showed off this feature where they're going to have artist photo galleries. So if you're looking at a specific artist's page inside iTunes, there's a little galleries button, and you can click on that, and you can see photos that were posted by the band or by that particular artist, which is kind of cool. If you're a fan of a certain artist, that could be a lot of fun. On the playlist side of things, they made some improvements and some enhancements over there. You can actually now see your music library and your playlists at the same time. What's cool about that is that gives you the ability to drag and drop songs to add and create playlists. It makes that whole process a lot easier. As a matter of fact, when you're dragging albums now in the main interface, a little panel slides out from the side so that you can see your playlists and you can create new ones and add that sort of stuff. In the main playback, the LCD area, you know, the little display at the top that shows you what your currently playing track is, how much time remaining, how much time is left, and that sort of thing. Up in that area now, they have something called the Up Next icon. You can click on that and you can see what the next track is that's going to play. And as you're browsing through your music library, you can actually add additional tracks to the Up Next list, so you can sort of define what you want to hear next as you're listening to your music and throw that in there and then just review it through the little LCD. Apple has also made some enhancements to iTunes to add more spotlight style search. So now when you go up to the search box and you're looking for something, it'll search through your whole library like it's always done, but it'll drop down a little panel with the results and you can interact with that panel and click on things to start playing tracks or drill in to get more information about a specific track or artist or something like that. So that looks like a nice little enhancement to search. Big enhancement that they seem to have done is an updated, all brand new mini player. So when you minimize and you get that little mini player now, you have things like you can roll over the area to get access to the controls. So they've really opened up, rather than having the controls and the track artist information all together, those things are separate, and you see the controls after you roll over the area. And there's an Up Next button in the mini player, so they're continuing that functionality across. And also there is search built right into the mini player, so you don't have to go back into the full iTunes interface, say if you want to add additional tracks to your What's Up Next list, or you want to add additional tracks to what you're listening to. You can do all that right from the mini player using search and finding the tracks that you're looking for and putting them in there. iTunes is also being updated to add a lot more iCloud support. So iCloud is now fully integrated. And what that means is that you have both your local content and your purchased content displayed in your library, and especially for things like movies and TV shows, you can just go ahead and click right into that and start streaming it. And it will also sync and remember your playback positions as you move between your Macs and your different devices, because all of that is synced up through iCloud. So, for example, you could start watching a movie on your Mac and then seamlessly move to your iPad and then back to your Mac or maybe over to your iPhone. all that stuff is going to integrate in terms of the bookmarks and playback positions. And I guess Apple thought you wouldn't want a redesigned iTunes without a redesigned App Store or iTunes Store, excuse me. So that has been redone also. One of the big new features over there is that previews now actually play in the background while you're browsing. So you can start listening to one of those 90-second previews and then navigate away, and that'll still continue to play in the background. So you can be off and looking at other stuff and things like that. And they've also added concerts to the artist pages. So if you go in, you can see what upcoming venues and tour dates and stuff like that an artist has going on. And I would assume you could add those things to your calendar and do things like that. But I haven't seen it in action yet. So when we do, we'll know a little bit more information. And we should see the new iTunes arriving sometime, they said, in late October. Apple did also release this week a new version of iTunes, iTunes 10.7. And this update is just out there to support the new iPods and the new iPhone when they are released next week. So it doesn't have the big sweeping changes that we're going to see in iTunes 11. You're going to have to wait until October before we get that one. And that confused me a little bit because they made the announcement and then suddenly there's an update to iTunes and I thought I was going to get the new interface and I didn't. I had to scratch my head and go back and look and go, oh, okay, I see what they're doing. So just be aware of that. A few little odds and ends that came out after the announcement as well. The app Apple is going to be shutting down Ping officially. This was their sort of music social network that was built into iTunes. Didn't really work out for them, apparently, and they're going to be shuttering the doors on that one on September 30th. So if you're a Ping fan or a Ping user, just be aware of that. I mean, I used it a little bit, but I really wasn't going in there on a day-to-day basis to do anything. So I think, you know, people like me are the reason why Apple is deciding to sort of shut it down. And I think with that, that covers everything that Apple covered at their event and a little bit more. That happened on Wednesday, and then they announced the iPhone 5 was going to be on sale Friday on the 14th. And so they opened up sales at midnight Pacific time, Friday morning. And everything seemed to run very smoothly this time around. It actually seemed like the iOS app for the App Store app on iOS was up almost immediately. That was actually what I used to order my iPhone 5. Right at 11:59, I kind of had fired up the app. I tapped it again, and boom, it took me right to the order page for, well, it came up with the link for the order page for the iPhone 5. I was able to tap in there, and literally by 12:02 a.m. Pacific time, I had my iPhone 5 order in. So it went in really quickly. There were a bunch of people reporting online that the store, the actual online store on Apple's website, was not coming up and didn't come up for several minutes. So I think in the future, if you're trying to get in and get an order on the iPhone, well, now I'm going to tell you, and we're not going to be able to do it, but it has been in years past that the iOS app seems to be able to get in a little bit quicker. And I think that's because less people think about it, although now I've probably ruined it. But anyway, I was able to get in this time, and that was fine. Got my order in. And across the board, I think it was much smoother ordering for most people. It doesn't seem like the site went down like it has in years past. So I think Apple was really prepped this time around, finally. But either way, no matter what you were doing, within an hour and 17 minutes, the website started reporting that iPhone 5 ship times had slipped to 2 weeks, that you weren't going to be able to get your phone on release day. That kind of upset some people, but it seemed to indicate that Apple had at least sold out of its initial online inventory, pre-order inventory, in about a little over an hour. A lot of the carrier sites still had availability for launch day. Verizon, AT&T, and Sprint, they continued to have availability through the next morning and almost into the afternoon. But by Friday afternoon Pacific time, seemed like only Sprint was still offering release day iPhone 5s with 7/21 availability. If you want to get one now at this point on launch day, your best bet is probably going to be at a retailer. So you're going to need to go to the store, either an Apple store or a carrier store, and stand in line. Not a bad experience, though. I often opted for doing that. It was only recently that I started kind of doing pre-orders of my devices. I like going down there and hanging out in line. It's a big party. It's a whole lot of fun. So if you've never done it, I would really encourage you, if you have any interest at all, to try it out, because you need to get there early. Some people camp out overnight if you're into that sort of thing. I never really did that. I usually just went really early on the morning of launch day, say 5, 6 a.m., something like that. Just hung out, get some coffee, bring some warm clothes, and you'll be fine. It's great. So that's another way to get it. Or you can just wait. You know, lead times, like I said, I think last time I checked, seem to be somewhere in the 2 to 4 week range at this point. And at a certain point, you're just going to be able to walk into an Apple store and just buy the same thing. So if you don't have to have it day one, then you probably don't need to worry about all this stuff. But if you're crazy like me and have to have it day one, you're going to want to stand in line. But by all accounts, because of how quickly this sold out, predictions are very high that Apple is going to break their sales number records. I think it's helping that the iPhone 5 is having a simultaneous 9-country launch rollout. And I think that it contributed to the fact that it was the fastest pre-sale sellout that they'd ever seen. Analysts are predicting these huge numbers. In a statement to The Loop, Apple said officially that they've been completely blown away by the customer response. Of course, they did not give any hard numbers. I would imagine we'll have those by Monday. Apple's probably going to release, they usually release the first weekend sales numbers and will let us know exactly how many of these devices they sold. But I think metric crud load is probably one way we could put it. If we keep our, or want to keep our clean tag, we could use another terminology if we want to have an explicit tag, but we don't want to do that. So I'm not going to go there, but sold a lot of iPhones. And there was some good news actually on Saturday. There were some reports that some customers who had originally been told that they were on the 2 week, you know, ships in 2 week time frame, they started getting emails letting them know that the devices that they pre-ordered on Friday were going to be able to be shipped and would arrive on launch day on the 21st rather than 2 weeks later. So if you happen to be in that lucky group, congratulations. And, you know, it's going to be a fun day, and I'll be giving, you know, and having coverage. I'm going to probably head out to the Apple store in Carlsbad like I normally do and do some interviews in line. So if you happen to be at that store and you see me there, come on over, because I'd love to interview you about your impressions on the iPhone 5, what model you bought, that sort of thing. And we'll get you on the MacCast. So that's a lot of fun. I love hanging out and doing that sort of thing. And then just one last item to talk about before we get to the interviews is iCloud.com, which now appears to be complete. It's come out of beta. Apple added the last couple applications, the web-based versions of applications, to that to bring it into feature parity with Mountain Lion and iOS. So reminders and notes have been added to iCloud.com. They do all their syncing mojo and magic. And there's now apparently some other little enhancements on iCloud.com that make it more like iOS. Apparently, iOS style banner notifications now appear in the web interface. So if you're in, say, the calendar app and you're looking at your calendars in the web interface and you suddenly get some emails, you can get a little notification pop down right there in your web browser. Also, VIP support was added to the mail application on iCloud.com. And you can, like I was saying, control those notifications within the settings. So you can go in and decide what you want to be notified about and what you don't want to be notified about in the web interface. So that is all done. And you've now got consistency from desktop to web interface to iOS device, which is nice. And with that, that's it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another one of my show sponsors, and that's Circus Ponies. You know, I usually talk to you about Circus Ponies Notebook, which is an awesome, awesome application. You should definitely go to circusponies.com and check it out. But I'm excited because Circus Ponies has a new application out. And for me, it's kind of nostalgic because it brings back something a customization that we used to have back in the OS 8, OS 9 days, where we could tweak around with our trash. And the application is called iTrash, and it does a couple things. First and foremost, it actually puts the trash icon back on your desktop. So you can put it anywhere on your desktop that you want now. It's not relegated and stuck sort of trapped in the dock. And there's some good reasons for not having it in the dock. One being that when it's in the dock, the position of it actually moves around, right? As your dock sizes and grows and shrinks and stuff like that, your trash isn't always in the same place. And for those of us who like to use drag and drop, that's an impact on muscle memory, right? You can't assume that your trash is always in the lower right-hand corner, for example. Well, iTrash will allow you to do that. You can put it right there and always get access to it. But the other thing that it brings is the ability to customize the trash icon. Not only that, but they have these really cool characters and animations and stuff that you can get for your trash icon. So they have things like Black Hole or Classic, which is one of my favorites. So it's more of an old school trash icon that you can have on your desktop, and they have little sounds and things to make it a little bit more fun, so it's reminiscent again of some of the customizations that we used to be able to do in the old OS 7 days. Sometimes miss those days and those the ability to sort of customize everything and theme your OS. Apple says now, hey, this is the way it's going to be and this is the way it's going to look until creative developers like Circus Ponies comes along and allows us to do the things that we used to be able to do. So you can do that. You can also just get more ways to empty the trash more quickly and easily through iTrash. So you can do things like get easier access to secure empty trash. You can also force the trash to empty, which can be frustrating sometimes without a tool like iTrash. If something gets stuck in the trash, you sometimes wouldn't know how to get rid of it, or you'd have to do some sort of terminal command to actually clear out your trash icon so it wasn't always appearing as full. You can do that more easily with iTrash, and you can also get quick access to ejecting volumes right from the trash icon on your desktop. So a lot of great features and functionality, and a lot of fun features and functionality in iTrash. You should check it out. It's just $4.95 US, available from the Circus Ponies website over at circusponies.com. And a big thank you to them for their continued support of the MacCast. So on Friday, right after the new iPhone went on sale, I wanted to grab some interviews with a couple folks from the Apple Mac community and talk to them about, you know, what sort of decisions they went through when trying to figure out, am I going to upgrade to the iPhone 5? Am I going to stick with what I have? If I am going to upgrade, you know, what plans am I going to choose? What models am I going to choose? What carriers am I going to go with? Because I think these are all questions that a lot of us have and go through. And I think it's great to get some insight from some others in the community about how they went about making those decisions and sorts of things. The other thing that I wanted to do was get some impressions from someone who had actually been at Apple's launch event and actually had some FaceTime or some hands-on time with these devices and could give us some real impressions of what they thought. So I first got Dave Hamilton on the line from Mac Observer, Mac Geek Gab. He was actually at the event in San Francisco on Wednesday and was able to touch and feel and play with the new iPods, with the new iPhone, and I had him on and asked him a few things about what he thought. He even got to play with or got a set of the new earbuds. So we're going to talk to him about all of those first impressions. And then I wanted to get a release day perspective or a pre-sale day perspective from someone outside of the US, get a little bit more information about how the whole process went internationally, since Apple did release or open up pre-sales in 9 separate countries. So I grabbed Ewan Rankin from the British Tech Network and asked him some questions about whether or not he was upgrading. And we talked a little bit about how the carrier plans differ from the US to the UK and stuff like that. So I hope you enjoy that interview. And then David Sparks came on and I got his thoughts and impressions on the new iPhone 5 and how his pre-sale day went. So here are 3 interviews back to back with Dave Hamilton, Ewan Rankin, and David Sparks.
I think I forget to call you Dave because we talk so often about this.
Because we talk every day. I know. But I was always thinking about this. It's going to be weird to talk about this.
Do you always have great? You always have great insight. And the other big advantage, the reason I want to get you on the show, is that you're one of the few people I personally know who's actually touched these darn things because you were at the event, right?
Right. That's right. Yes, I have faded memories of touching these things in the midst of 12 hours of flying back and forth across the country. Yes.
Yeah, you had to go out there quick. It was kind of last minute, but you got the invite. And we won't go into the show because I really want to get to the meat of the devices themselves. And I know you didn't have a ton of time with them, but you wrote up a couple nice pieces for TMO. And just with your quick first impression. So I was hoping maybe you'd share those with us. Maybe we should start with the iPhone 5. So what was the first takeaway after, being able to hold on to that thing for a couple minutes?
Yeah. So I had intentionally, as soon as they said that they were going to go to the, that we had a hands-on room, I ripped the extended battery off of my iPhone 4 because I thought I need to be able to compare these two things back and forth. And so I had, and then there was probably 15, 20 minutes. I didn't make it into the hands-on room in the first round, honestly, because I needed to go to the men's room. But that gave me some time, right? And so I checked my email and stuff on my iPhone 4S, my 4S, and then went into the room. And immediately upon picking up the iPhone 5, it felt smaller. I know it's taller, but it's not much taller. But it's definitely thinner and way lighter. I mean, it just even, and so I held the two of them in, kind of in either hand, and there was no question. I mean, this thing is way lighter than than its predecessor, and it really doesn't feel bigger. It feels smaller, in fact. And yeah, I turned it on and I woke it up rather.
Right.
And sure, I noticed that the I had five rows of icons on the home screen. And so I went around and I played with some stuff and I launched an older app that they had on there so that I could see what the bars looked like. And that, that was fine. It was like, oh, okay, I see. It's no big deal at all. And then I launched Safari and it was like, holy cow, the world opened up. It was like, oh, this makes a big difference because it's a lot more real estate in the web browser. When you open Safari on your iPhone, you've got a row of control icons at the bottom. At the top, you have, of course, the bar at the top with the time and all that. Then you have the bar for the web page. And then in between that is the content of the page. Well, all the rest of that stuff remains the same. So the additional rows worth of icons in height is applied 100% to the web page.
Right. That's nice.
Right. So it's more than just, percentage wise, it's a lot more. It's a huge difference. I don't think it's a third more, but it's close. It might be 20% more, or maybe even like 25% more space. So it made a big, big difference.
Yeah, I would imagine the same thing would apply to like text-based apps then too, like Pages and those sorts of things.
Yeah, I didn't have the opportunity to test those, but I totally see where that would be the case. And I used it for maybe probably not 5 minutes. I mean, total, I probably used it for 10, but web browsing, I probably did for 3. And now the web browser on my iPhone 4S since then has felt totally cramped and I can't see anything. And it's like I'm looking through a pinhole. So.
Yeah, well, I love what you're saying about the balance, and that was kind of what I was hoping for when I heard they were going with a taller screen, because I never wanted a bigger iPhone, as more and more of Apple's competitors have been going to, 4-inch, 4.5-inch, 5-inch phones. I see these out and about, and I see people holding them, and they just look massive, and I like to put my iPhone in my front jean pocket. I mean, that's where I carry it most of the time in the winter, or in my shorts in the summer, but, I can't. These big, wide, note things just never made sense to me. So it seems like a good balance is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, it totally is. The fact that they were smart enough not to make it wider is the key, because you can still dance fully across it with your thumb, just like you can any other iOS device. And this is true of the iPod Touch as well, right? Because it also got taller. But if they had made it wider, it would feel like a stretch, you know, going from one side of the screen to the other, especially in that kind of one-handed, I'm doing everything with my thumb mode.
Right.
And that becomes a whole lot less comfortable when the thing gets really wide. But the taller, it didn't matter at all in terms of, you know, ergonomics with the moving around it with your thumb or your fingers. Yeah. It was still very, very comfortable. So yeah, it was really smart for them to keep it the same width and just make it a little taller, and really convenient that making it taller then made it 16 by 9. It was, you know, it was almost as if this path had been laid out for them. So, yeah. You know. Yeah.
So the other big thing that I'm really curious about is just the sort of fit and finish and the looks of the thing. I had kind of some big concerns of the whole two-tone back thing. What were your impressions of that kind of stuff?
I think it's nice. I've always liked the brushed aluminum thing. So,
I love brushed aluminum. It's just some pictures I see, it seems like it's a very jarring, you know, transition from the one surface to the other. And then other ones that I see, it's really nice and blended. And I prefer the more sort of blended look. So maybe it's an angle, a lighting thing. I don't know.
Yeah, it all felt very smooth and looked fine. There was nothing jarring about it in looking at it. It in the room there.
Does it feel better? I mean, I would imagine, because the glass thing I like, but it can be a little slippery depending upon what's going on. I live in a hot climate, so if your hands are sweaty, you know, things slide around. Is it textured enough that it gives a little more even grip, maybe?
Yeah, I liked it. I like the feel of it. The whole feel of it in the hand was better than the 4S.
I like the black anodized sides on the black one too. You know, the fact that it wraps around in that unibody stuff. You know, probably you didn't have enough time to go into any performance things, but I mean, I don't think there's a lot on the spec side. Was it noticeably faster? I mean, obviously it's got up to a 2x faster processor according to Apple, but I mean, is that even noticeable?
Scrolling was even faster still. Yeah. Yeah. It was, I mean, it kind of, I noticed it the first time when I went from an iPhone 3 to a 3GS.
Yeah.
Right?
That was a big jump. Yeah.
Yeah. Suddenly, like, scrolling wasn't this cumbersome activity. And then, you know, obviously to the 4 and then the 4S was the same kind of thing. And there was that same noticeable jump in the feel of, okay, this is, wow. I thought the 4S was smooth and this is even smoother.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did feel that right out of the gate.
I think we're into that point where it's more incremental than.
Yes. You know.
Huge leaps in performance.
That's right.
Cool. Yeah. Well, you know, we've got them on order. So that's the other thing I want to ask you about in a minute. But real quick, with the hands-on stuff, a couple other devices obviously there. The new Nano, I think you were very impressed with.
I love the Nano because it's like, the rumor sites never say anything about it, right? You have no idea what it's going to be, but you know it's probably not going to be an iteration over last year's model. The Nano is, I think in Apple speak, Nano translates to whatever we call that experimental iPod we're working on that doesn't fit into any other category. And they're totally happy to reinvent it constantly.
I think they want to do that just so I keep buying them, so I have a little collection.
Right, that's right.
Every little different one.
Yeah, no, it was cool. I did like it. Really thin. Videos look great on it. I played the Lorax on it. They had that preloaded on there. And obviously I didn't watch the whole thing,
right?
But it looked good. The video was really sharp and clear. Totally could watch a movie on it. I'm someone who used to, on airplanes, watch movies on my, you know, what now is an iPod Classic. Mm-hmm. Obviously I don't do that anymore cause I have an iPad, but I could totally see you doing that more, you know, on a bus or a subway. It would be a great thing to watch like little short videos on or whatever while you're making your daily commute.
Car rides with the kids are always a good application for that sort of thing. So
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Parents yeah, but appreciate it was, that. It's a little
and
cheaper.
It feels like iOS because it's got a home button, you know, and the way it kind of moves around, it's not as clunky as the sixth generation Nano, which was the square one that
right.
we just came from. So yeah, the UI, it's not iOS, or at least it's not iOS as we know it, but it certainly is way closer to it. It's got volume buttons on the side. It's got a home button on the front. It's got the, you know, the shut off button on the top. So it's got this really comfortable feel to it. So
yeah. Would you think of the the design, the colors. You know, when I saw those, I kind of thought a lot of them beyond the black one to me look like a 15-year-old girl's iPod or something like that. I don't know how I feel about the colors in the white.
I think that's who it's targeted for, man. I think it's fine. Yeah.
So we'll get the silver or the black one, and then yeah. And the rest will get those. Cool. Yeah. Was there anything else there? The ear pods. You had a little bit of time with those too.
They did. They gave us a set of those as we walked out the door, and I was really surprised. I tried them on the airplane first, and I hated them. Now I should say that I expected to hate them across the board. I am very finicky when it comes to earphones. I tend to only use earphones that have a seal, isolate you from the outside world. And of those, I tend to only use earphones that have been custom fitted for my personal ears, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm the wrong guy to test these things. I'm the last guy you want to give these things to and then have me talk about them. So I figured, what the heck? I get on the airplane, I opened up the box, I plugged it in, and they were horrible. I couldn't hear a thing. All I heard was like this tinkly high-end sound, and it's because airplanes are noisy.
Right.
And so I thought, well, that's fine. So I packed them up in the box, and I got out my custom-fitted earphones, and I enjoyed my movie or whatever it was I was watching on the flight. And then the next day, I thought, well, I should try these stupid things again. So I took it out in the office, and I'm like, huh, they actually sound really good. There's a nice low end out of them. The low end and the high end is really well balanced, which is tough in a non-sealing earphone. You can still hear people around you, which obviously is the point of these things, you know,
right.
Very comfortable the way it sits in the ear. So yeah, I was actually very impressed. They're so much better than the earbuds that we used to get.
What they had before.
Yeah. So it's really nice. It used to drive me crazy that, you know, here you have the most popular music player in the world. They've got decent quality music on it, right? Everything from iTunes is 256K AAC. And so you've got all this data, music data, and you're pumping it through these crummy little earbuds that are horrible. And that's what most people listen to because that's what came with it. So at least this gets you to the point where music sounds good. I think I wrote it in my review. I was able to lose myself in the music and stop thinking about the fact that I was reviewing a pair of headphones. And I think that's probably the best testament I can give to these things.
Yeah.
I won't use them all the time, but that's me. I'm picky. I have earphones that cost, you know, 10 and maybe even more, 10 times that, maybe 20 times that. You know what I mean? But it's not a fair comparison, but in terms of just a normal, you want to listen to a tune and you've got these things and they came with your iPod, they sound fantastic. I'm really impressed with them. They did a nice job.
Yeah. That's a good thing. I'm one of those people who's guilty of, I just use the earbuds. I use them all the time and I don't really care or notice, but, you know, and I probably should, but it's just not one of the things I'm into. I'm not that big of an audiophile. So I was fine when we were listening to 64 kilobit, you know, MP3s way back when MP3s first came out. Everybody was saying how horrible it was. So totally guilty. So it's going to be nice to have something a little bit better. And the fit is more the big thing, you know, that's my biggest issue with them is they pop out of your ears. They're really uncomfortable if you wear them for any kind of length of time. So it sounds like some of those issues are resolved as well. So
totally. I once I had them in, I shook my head all over the place and I could not get them to come out.
Cool. So last thing I want to ask you about now that the iPhone is on sale, Did you put your order in right away? Did you order overnight? And then the second thing I want to ask you about is carrier stuff, because I've been waffling back and forth on that stuff. So, you know, are you sticking with whatever carrier you had? Or are you switching? And if you are, why?
So I'll answer in the order you asked me.
Yeah, sorry.
Just for the sake of picking an order.
I should have fed those to you one at a time. But
no, it's fine. I did not wake up. It would have been 3 a.m. Eastern that they went on sale. And I knew the site was going to be totally swamped. And I had just gotten home at like 3 a.m. Eastern the night before because of my trip back. And I thought, you know, I just can't do this to myself. So I woke up this morning, which was like 6:30, because that's when we get up with the kids, put the kids on the bus and went over to the office and tried to order. By that point in time, the Apple store was at their 2-week window. They had sold out of their 9/21 delivery allotment. And I'm like, oh, well, whatever. So I ordered. And then I thought, you know, let me check AT&T's website. And I did stick with AT&T, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But
yeah,
I looked and they had 921. So I was like, oh, great. So I ordered another one. And then later in the day, I was able to cancel. So yeah, I did order.
But direct from AT&T.
I did order direct from AT&T. So yeah, hopefully it'll arrive on the 24th.
Well, and that went okay. I mean, their order process was fine at this point this morning. Yeah.
That's 7:15, 7:30 Eastern time this morning. It was totally fine. Yeah.
That was the one thing I noticed about this. I mean, I was happened to be up, you know, because it was only midnight for me. So I just immediately opened the, and I had issues in the past. Every launch in the past, I tried to go through Apple's website and it was just a nightmare. Very often what I ended up doing was just going to the store on launch day and just, you know, waiting in line with everybody because of that. But so this time I thought, you know what, I'm going to try the App Store app because in the past that seems to have worked for most people. And literally I was sitting here, I noticed it was 11:59 and I had the app open already and I hit sort of the button again to relaunch it and boom, it came right up and I had my order in within like 2 minutes, which just had never happened before.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it seemed to be that way across the board this time around. It seems like everybody got their act together and most ordering was pretty smooth. So you're sticking with AT&T because I was in that waffling thing where I was really, really close to going with Verizon. I was really, really close to just buying a completely unlocked phone and using something like Straight Talk until I realized, oh, well, I'm probably not going to be able to get 4G over there. So what went into your decision to kind of to stick?
I had gone through quite a bit of waffling last year when the 4S came out. To the point where I actually ordered an AT&T phone and a Verizon phone and figured, okay, I'll do the research between now and when they arrive and then I'll just send one back. And, it's service here in some parts of New Hampshire and New England, Verizon is way better than AT&T. But where I am here, it's pretty much the same. We have four phones on AT&T, although only one is under contract. So, you know, and it was the same thing last year. So it was, you know, we had the opportunity to jump ship if we wanted. But we've been relatively happy with AT&T. It's been fine. And so we just kept it.
Yeah, it makes the whole process easier. You know, for me, it came down really to a price point thing because I'm grandfathered in on unlimited, plus the fact that we can do the whole tiered thing. Like my wife uses hardly any data. So she's on, you know, the lowest data plan. And I looked at their family share stuff and it's like, that just gives us more than we need. And we end up paying for a bunch of stuff we're not going to use. So while we can get more and it's not exponentially more in terms of cost, it still is more per month. And so it's just like, we're just better off staying where we are. And when I looked at ETF fees for going to Verizon or trying to split phones, I'd be paying more for the first year. And, you know, you compound all that. And then, you know, we're in the unique situation where because we do what we do, I'm going to get a new phone every year. So you got to factor that cost in too. So when I was looking at even like doing the whole, oh, I'll just buy it outright. Well, it's not buying outright every 2 years. It's buying outright every year.
And yeah, so you start
doing
expensive.
All the math. And like, even though the contract savings work out, they never catch up to the unsubsidized phone price. So, you know, what I'm coming to realize is there is no blanket sort of one size fits all. A lot of people want to have the answer of, you know, which carrier should I use? Which plan should I use? And it's sort of like everybody's given situation, your geographic location, all, you know, whether you're on a family plan or not a family plan, how much data everybody in your family uses. All these things go to factor into that decision, and where you end up is going to be based on all those sorts of things.
That's right. So, yeah, there is no one size fits all.
Yeah,
no.
But so many sites are trying to, you know, do that or give people that answer, and it's just like I'm starting to tell my audience more and more, you know, you got to weigh every little part and then figure it out. So
yeah,
fortunately.
And then just,
Well, cool. Thanks for coming on and chatting for a little bit. I won't take up more of your time. Obviously, you guys are talking about this kind of stuff every week on Geek Gab, and you've moved that to Sundays now. Is that when you and
Yeah, we record Mac Geek Gab on Sunday nights, about 9 p.m. Eastern is when we turn the stream on, and then we go. So
yeah, you guys do the live thing too, so people can join
you
live. What time on Sunday evenings?
9 p.m. We start recording about 9 p.m. We turn the stream on actually about 15 minutes before that, so people get a little glimpse into the pre-show if they want.
Cool. And so, also, yeah, of course, all the great coverage on Mac Observer, I'll admit to being a little bit biased, but you guys are doing great stuff over there.
Thanks, man. Yeah, as you well know, we work hard every day, so it's it's good.
Cool. So people should check all that out. All right. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Adam. And hey, thanks for all your help rolling to the new design there at Mac Observer, too. That's
that's
a big
welcome.
Part of why it looks so good.
Thanks. Hey, Ewan, how's it going?
It's all right, sir. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for coming on and giving us a little UK perspective. I'm trying to, something I do on the show, you know, it's very much an international show. I obviously, most of the time on the MacCast, have the US perspective just by way of that's where I am at. But, you know, we get a lot of feedback from different countries and stuff like that. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about now that the iPhone has gone on sale. I want to find out, well, first and foremost, are you upgrading? And if so, why or why not?
If I can tell you, but not my wife, I might do. The problem I've got with it at the moment is I looked at what was released, and I got to say, I thought it was a really good keynote. Yeah. I think it's, you know, finally Apple have got out of this. You know, they've gone from one more thing on a whole pile of other things to delivering nothing but one thing in the keynotes. And they got back to the roots of coming out with a range of products, which, you know, kind of salivated and made you feel like you wanted them. Mm-hmm. The only thing I'm going to say about the five screen thing is that I'm really happy with the 4S. I mean, I was out with a guy on Wednesday night at the thing, and he was saying, I'm going to go to the 5 definitely. And I said, well, what are you on? He said, well, I'm sick and tired of losing calls, and I'm on a 4. And I said, well, since I went to a 4S, I haven't dropped a single call. It's been very good for me. So I want to have a hold of this thing. I want to have a play with it. I want to see what it's really doing for me in terms of increased speed, the bigger screen, watching a movie on it. And seeing if it, because over here in the UK, of course, we haven't got the same kind of benefits of 4G, and there's an awful lot of issues around who's going to have what part of spectrum and whether the iPhone's going to work on it. So, you know, if I get into it, I'm not getting into it for the 4G. I'm getting in for the actual production and performance of the unit itself,
and that's hardware. Yeah,
exactly. And that's what I want to see first in my own hands.
Well, yeah, and I mean, when you were looking at it from that perspective, I mean, there's updates, but we're talking about a lot of incremental updates. I don't know that it's, you know, quantitatively. I mean, Apple's saying up to twice as fast on the graphics and up to twice as fast on the GPU. But, I mean, a lot of that's going to be dependent upon software. A lot of that's going to be dependent upon, you know, what you're doing with it. And, again, you know, if it's 20% faster at doing certain things, that may or may not be worth, you know, a full upgrade, right? I'm guessing that's maybe where you're at with it a little bit.
No, because I think you've got the A6 processor, which is a big difference from the A5 processor in the 4S. I think that'll be a significant boost graphics wise. You've got the screen being slightly bigger, and as devs start to take hold of the extra pixels that are available to them, you're going to start seeing games that come through that are going to be 5 only, not 4S, just because of physical screen real estate. So I think there's a need to upgrade. I think or there's a need to upgrade as far as the hardware and the development's concerned, but I just, in my own mind, don't know if I need that upgrade. I think that's the difference, is that they have pressed ahead. I think it is a proper upgrade, but is it an upgrade that I need? That's going to be my question. That may be the question of a lot of people.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm just thinking, like, I have a 4 in my household. I even had for a while a 3GS. I actually ended up giving it to a relative who, you know, was looking for a better phone because they were on a pay-as-you-go plan somewhere else with just like one of the cheap kind of throwaway phones. And, you know, even just using that, I mean, most of the software to me runs just fine. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like, so I'm only saying incremental from the standpoint of it's relative to what you're doing with it and how you're using it. So it can be very often hard to justify, you know, buying a whole new device when your daily impression is going to be a 20%, you know, boost in, say, the speed of launching an app, or 20% boost in your game performance frame rate or something like that. So, you know, a lot of people can get by with what they have and don't really need to upgrade. So I guess that's what I'm kind of alluding to. But I do want to get into a little bit. You can comment on that, but I want to also get into some of this carrier stuff, because you do have a particularly different situation than we do, I think.
Yeah, I think the big upgrade for me is going to be what happens with Lightning. That's the thing that's kind of piqued my interest. And I said it today on our Mac show, is that, you know, Apple don't do anything without there's a purpose there. And there's no way they've gone from a 30-pin dock connector to this 8/9-pin dock connector without there is something else for it. You know, they've gone analog to digital. This thing's got chips in it. It's not going to be a cheap cable. And I'm interested in my own mind to think what's coming to make utilization of that cable, because that is not just about data back to your Mac to transfer and go up to you know, a faster transfer of your podcasts and that kind of thing. That something has to be coming on the back of that in the next 12 months. And that's what's kind of whetted my appetite for seeing that you know, there might be something pretty cool in the horizon.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the whole 4G thing, because that's a consideration over here. We've got the different networks. You know, Verizon has the bigger 4G rolled out network. I ended up, you know, I was waffling back and forth for a long time on what I was going to do, whether I was going to try and go with a new unlocked device, which I think Apple isn't even selling here in the States yet. We can't even, you know, order an unlocked one, so we don't know what pricing is going to be like. I know you can over there. And the 4G networks, you know, Verizon's been heavily advertising that, you know, we've got way more coverage and we're in more areas and stuff like that. But then, you know, I read a report that somebody had done speed tests, and in the markets that AT&T is in, they beat Verizon in terms of speed in every market. So for me, at the end of the day, it comes down to, where am I going to be using my phone? And AT&T happens to have 4G coverage where I live. And, you know, how fast is it? Because really, for me, it's about download speeds and accessing websites. Now, there's a bunch of different bands over here, and I even noticed, like, for us, there's 4G, like, 1, 3, 5. I forget all the numbers that they have listed. But Apple even has confusing stuff on their website that says, you know, even if you have 4G LTE in the same band, it may not work on, you know, the same carriers or in different regions and stuff like that. So, for example, what I had noticed was that AT&T is using different bands than, say, Verizon over here, but Verizon has the same, at least in terms of band numbers, LTE bands, as supposedly what's over there in the EU, which is like 1, 3, and 5, I want to say, is the common ones. So yeah. can you set, have you made any sense of this over there? I mean, like,
well,
do you guys get LTE
point.
Or not get LTE, or like what's happening?
Well, you got about 10 years with cell phones here in the UK, and there was something ridiculous, like, across all of the providers, there was 4,000 different plans that were available across only 7 or 8 providers here, full stop. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, Ofcom fortunately stepped in and said, this is ridiculous. The consumer cannot decide what is best for them. It's impossible. And I think we're at a situation like that with 4G because, you know, you've got, there's a lot of the providers here aren't providing adequate 3G yet, let alone, you know, if you go into the data market, HSPA and HSPA Plus, mm-hmm. HSPA Plus in areas is delivering no better than what HSPA is. And the other problem that we've got here is that everywhere has been awarded a section of the 4G market, which is all well and good. But the rest of the 4G spectrum that's coming up for use, the iPhone won't be able to work with. So what you'll have is a situation where one company has total and utter control of the iPhone in the UK. And
who
already
is that?
That's Everything Everywhere, which is a combination of the Orange network and the T-Mobile network. They're a partnership.
Okay, so that's the new EE thing that everybody's talking about.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. It's effectively just two competitors who've decided to combine forces and try and flatten the market that way. The Three network, which is a very low-level provider over here, but not a bad one in terms of quality of provision in main areas, they've actually ended up saying to EE, well, tell you what, sublet some of that network to us because we want to get a piece of this action. So now what you've got is EE is controlling the sole 4G network for the band that iPhone is going to be on, and subletting it out to other people. And also they've been given a bit of a head start by Ofcom that have said, yeah, okay, go for a trial in 16 cities and let's see what happens. And then when the rest of the spectrum gets auctioned off, the spectrum will be available for iPhone, but in all probability, Everything Everywhere will probably be strong enough that they could purchase the rest of that spectrum and shut out effectively everyone else in the market, which takes us back to beyond where you are, and you've always been a you know, I mean, the worst of the worst as far as competition is concerned.
Yeah, because they threw the map up in that keynote, and it was amazing, you know, in Europe how many, I mean, there are a vast, larger number of carriers than we have here. But it now, yeah. From what you're saying now, though, it sounds like if you want 4G LTE, that really you only have one choice.
Well, but I think that's the point, is that you'll get all the other characters saying that they've got 4G, but no one will realize that they can't just go and buy an iPhone at the Apple store, walk into O2 and say, please activate this, because O2 will say, well, I can't. Like, you can't transfer your existing account onto this phone. And the average consumer won't understand why. I think we're at the bad old days again of the Wild West of cell phones, that 4G has got so many variants, so many options, mm-hmm. and so many frequencies that people have no concept of what it is. You ask my mother what 4G is, and you'd be lucky to get an answer at all, let alone start deciding whether it's 1 through 5.
Well, so from a marketing standpoint, because I think what they're doing here, what I'm trying to do, maybe it's just me, is I'm trying to make the distinction between 4G and 4G LTE.
Yeah, me too.
you know, because like here, HSPA Plus, AT&T calls 4G. And so the reason... that one of the other reasons I'm sticking with AT&T instead of moving to Verizon is someone pointed out that, you know, AT&T can fall back. So in those markets where they don't have LTE coverage, I'm going to fall back on HSPA Plus, which is pretty darn fast. You know, it's up to 21 megabits a second down. Now, I get usually around 3 to 5, but it's good enough. Whereas with Verizon, if you fall off their LTE network, you're dropping back down to their lower CDMA, the 3G speeds. So, I mean, that makes a big difference. Even though they're in more regions, you know, the fallback is more graceful on AT&T. So those kinds of things start to matter. And this does all come down to sort of what frequencies and what bandwidths and sort of things different carriers support. And the fact that it's all fragmented like this, I think you're absolutely right, makes it a nightmare for consumers.
Well, here's the thing, you know, you and I are two guys who are interested and not devoid of any technology information in our heads, right. And we can't figure out what's the best thing to do. How's the average Joe in the street going to know? I mean, it's just...
So I guess I'm trying to turn to you for the answer, but it sounds like you don't have the one for...
Dude, I'm as lost as you are!
And this is what I'm coming to the conclusion to, and I've started to talk about on my show. I was actually just talking to Dave Hamilton a little bit about this, and the answer to me is it's very personal, in terms of sort of what plans and what carrier and how much data anybody needs, and you know, it's really to anybody's given situation, it's going to vary, and it comes down to even things like, you know, do I upgrade to this phone? Do I wait for the next one? Has to do with carrier subsidies and stuff like that. And the other thing that I found out recently about Europe that I didn't realize was that at the Apple store, you can only buy unlocked devices in the EU, right? So if you want a subsidized phone, you have to go to a carrier. Is that correct? In general?
I don't know. It used to be that you could buy a phone on a plan at the Apple store, but that may well have gone. I think you might be right there. You have to go buy your phone and then take it somewhere else, or you go into a shop run by a carrier and then get your subsidized phone.
Yeah. See, it seemed to be that way when I looked on Apple's website. They had full boat pricing on the iPhone 5, which is funny because we have exactly the opposite here right now. Like I was saying earlier, you can't get an unlocked phone because that was one of my options. I was literally going to pay like $850 for, you know, an unlocked phone and then put it on one of, we have, you know, what's called mobile virtual network operators, but none of them are offering LTE service. So... it's sort of like, if I want LTE, I got to do that. And by the time I priced out the fact that I usually get a new phone every year, if I start paying full price for those phones, it actually doesn't work out for me, even though on my monthly service and data plans, I'd be saving quite a significant amount. But because I have to pay, you know, more than double for the device itself, then that profit kind of eats itself away.
I think the separation is going to come based on whether you buy your cell phone tariff based on the fact that you want a certain type of cell phone or whether you want a certain type of tariff,
right?
That gives you numbers of text, numbers of call minutes and all that kind of thing. If you're buying it based on a plan saying, I want to pay no more than $35 a month, what's the maximum I can get? The maximum you can get is based on the number of minutes and the number of texts and the amount of data. And then you get a phone that kind of goes along with that tariff. And I think the good thing is that an awful lot of people who are less informed are probably going to buy that route. iPhone users tend to, I think, probably pick iPhone because they want iPhone, and they'll either go and buy something off the shelf in a store where they know that they're going to be able to link into the plans on the right frequencies because they bought it from that provider. Or the real danger is that they'll go into the Apple store and they'll buy an untethered phone, and then they'll take it to a carrier, and then they'll be stuck with a phone that they can't do anything with because the carrier doesn't support it. And the beauty of that scenario is that you've got quite a benevolent retailer in Apple who'll take it back as long as you haven't used it.
Yeah. I'm even starting to think, you know, for a lot of people who are less technical and really don't care about, you know, a lot of this stuff, that a recommendation might generally be get a 4 or a 4S, which are still really nice phones, unlocked, and, you know, use those on a pay-as-you-go plan, or, you know, put them on AT&T and use the 3G, which is plenty fast. You know, it's for most people, it's going to get email, it's going to surf the web, and they're not really going to notice that many differences, I think. So
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right.
You'll have more coverage in more areas, and it'll all work, and that seems simplified. Trying to figure out this 4G stuff is obviously impossible. All right, well, any other thoughts on anything else? iPods? Are you excited about the Nano?
I really like the iPods. I mean, I think that's one of the things as well, is when I go and have a fiddle with the iPhone, I may end up just getting myself a five-line touch. Yeah. The 4-inch touch kind of appeals a little bit more, and if I do that and I like it, then it gives me a bit more freedom in my phone choice. I enjoy my iPhone 4S, but I'm also painfully aware of the fact that it's not the only thing that's out there of any value in terms of the phone market. But I still like having the iOS stuff. I mean, this is kind of like my thing with lenses as a photographer.
Right.
I'm hocked into Canon because I got 40 grand's worth of lenses here. certain degree, I've probably got $300 worth of apps kicking around on iOS. I can't just walk away from those. And 64 gig iPod Touch is a good option for me. And I really like the Nano. I think they've done a good job with that. You know, that hybrid iOS thing now that's running, that's tweaked for the Nano, makes it look nice. It's this consistency again, and there's still the third party apps that you can get for it for operational use for you know, the Nike and that kind of thing. And I think it'll still appeal. And they wouldn't make it if they weren't selling it. The one that floored me is the fact they're still selling the damn Classic. I mean,
interesting.
I don't know why. I cannot figure out for the life of me why. I mean, is it still spinning media?
There's a certain market, because I think it doesn't cost them anything to have that, really. They haven't changed it. And there's certain people that just, I don't want to do the cloud thing. I don't want to do the streaming thing. I just want all my music on one thing. And they when they walk into the store, the genius can go, there you go. That's that. You know,
and storage as well. I think, you know, Kelly Gamont was on the podcast today, and she made a point that she carries her Classic around, doesn't use it for anything else but an external hard drive. So
interesting. Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned the Touch. I didn't even think about that. I mean, if you, with the updates they've done to the Touch in terms of the cameras, both front and back, and the screen, a lot of people probably could just buy a Touch and then just get, you know, a really cheap cell phone for their cell phone. If you don't mind having two devices, that may be the best of both worlds. You can get on a really affordable plan for your text and voice with just a simple device, and then just use your iPod Touch for all your games and apps. And
well, there was a rumor, wasn't there, about 12 months ago that they were going to come out with an iPod Touch that had a 3G data-only card.
The only hang-up.
Well, the masterstroke, I think, of Apple is not to put that out, because I think if they had put that out, they would have killed the phone market, because people would have then really felt true freedom. They could have gone with effectively an extremely mini iPod in the 4-inch Touch, and then they'd have been open on the free market, and Apple don't want that. They want them to be locked into the phone market and think, I'd like a Touch as an addition.
Yeah. I mean, you could also just, you know, get one of the data plans on your cheaper phone, you know, that lets you tether and just use that with your Touch. I don't know. There's a lot of options if you start to get creative, and I hadn't even really thought about some of those things. So now you've given me some stuff to think about.
Sorry,
so,
mate.
No, it's good. I'm glad I talked to you. I'm sure some people in the audience are now thinking too, hey, wait a minute. I don't know. It's just, how much I pay to my cell providers every month is just getting more and more irritating to me because they just seem to be wanting more money around every corner, and I seem to be getting less and less services from them for that money. So it seems like it's going in the right direction.
I bought my MiFi based on the fact I was getting HSBA Plus, and I get like 3 megabits a second down in areas that should be absolutely prime locations for getting way closer to 21. Yeah. And I feel like I'm being humped a little.
I've never gotten more than 7. I was looking at my speed tests recently. It's like, yep, the best I've ever gotten was 7 someplace, and I don't even remember where. But on average, it's 3 to 5 and more in the 3 range for me. So
yeah.
Who knows? So, you know, LTE, they say 100 megabits theoretical maximum, but all the numbers that, again, I was seeing over here was somewhere around 9. So I don't... That's like 10%. I mean, that's 10%. How can they even market this stuff that way? I don't know. All right, I digress. I'm going to let you go. Hey, Ewan, so you run the British Tech Network, is that right?
Yeah, we're at BritishTechNetwork.com. There's some guy called Christian comes on the Maccast once a month, our Mac podcast once a month, and a guy called Anatko comes on the third week, and Kelly Gamont's on there, and Chris Forsman's on there as well, and we have a good time on a Friday getting drunk and talking Mac. If you want to have a listen, go to BritishTechNetwork.com and check us out.
Yeah, who's that Christian guy?
I've never heard of him.
No, Adam, right?
Yeah, that's the fellow. I forget his name.
People do that all the time. It's the last name Christensen that throws people off. But yeah, I'm on the Mac show now, and I appreciate you having me on there because it's a lot of fun. I like being on with Forsman. He's a good guy. Those are good shows.
He revealed today that he was he's a lacto vegan or something like that, and I didn't know whether to shoot him with a phaser or I think he wants a burger. He's a lovely guy, lovely bloke, but
super smart.
Have a good time. We don't take ourselves too seriously. If someone expresses an opinion and it's wrong, so what? So would the rest.
Yeah, very fun show, British Tech Network, the Mac show, and they have a whole lineup of shows you should check out. But definitely that one because I'm on it, right? So
yeah.
Cool. Thanks for chatting with us.
Pleasure, mate.
Hey, David, how's it going?
Great, Adam.
Hey, I'm just kind of getting people's impressions now that the iPhone 5 has gone on sale, trying to find out who's upgrading, who's not upgrading. So I guess the first question is, are you upgrading? I'm assuming you are. But
For a long time, for years, I would always say, well, let's see what it looks like and blah, blah, blah. And you know what the fact is? I just buy every new one every year, every phone. I mean, it's one of the advantages of being a dad and paying for a bunch of phones is that there's always an upgrade available. So,
okay, so you're doing the thing. I was just talking to Dave Hamilton earlier. This is what I do. I've got my wife's phone and my phone on opposite year cycles.
Yeah.
So you are in the same kind of boat where you always kind of have a phone that's coming up.
Yeah. And when in a couple of years your kids get older and they start getting phones, you'll be amazed. You'll have even more.
Well, I've got all these old devices around, you know, too. So,
no, I sell.
Unlocking is getting very attractive to me. That's one thing I want to ask you about when we get into the plan stuff. So I'll probably get into that now. But just out of curiosity, which phone did you end up with?
I got the black 32. Black still 32. With AT&T.
Still with AT&T. Yeah. So the carrier thing is a big question and a big like debate that I had with myself on. What I was going to do, somebody had fully convinced me. Actually, I fully convinced myself because I had tried it out to, you know, buy a fully unlocked phone, and move to Straight Talk, which is basically AT&T's network, but pay as you go. It's like $45 a month, and you get unlimited everything. And when you price it all out, it totally works out if if you're the only person with a device, right? Because there's no tiering. There's no, like, my wife hardly uses any data, so we've got her on a low data plan with the Straight Talk thing. It's $45 per phone no matter what. So as you add more people and you add more phones, you're not really getting any kind of break. So there was that. And then plus the fact is it's not going to have the 4G LTE, and I want to have that capability. So then I thought about, you know, switching to the whole Verizon thing. But once again, with how I'm grandfathered in on my unlimited data, and when you start pricing everything out, it didn't really make any sense. So for you, was it just a straight, oh, we're on AT&T, we're just going to stick with AT&T, or had you looked at alternatives, especially given the LTE thing?
Well, it really doesn't. I really don't have much of a choice because our whole family is in the AT&T, you know, stream. I was going to use a different word, but I'll stick with stream. And, you know, so we've got, like, my daughter got a phone 6 months ago. So for the next 2 years, we're on that. I guess if I wrote a big check, I could get out of it. But and to be honest, in Orange County, California, at least, AT&T has been fine. I haven't had much trouble. It was interesting. We went up to Alaska this year, and I couldn't get Verizon to work anywhere because I have a Verizon iPad. And AT&T worked great up there. I don't know what the story is there. But the I'm not sufficiently motivated to change. In fact, I am we're now on one of those family shared plans because my kids are using increasing amounts of data, and putting them on the low plan, just once in a while they would nudge over it. And I can't really blame them because we're all connected and wired in. So we have a shared data plan, and the money was actually a little bit cheaper, and there's no risk of us, you know, blowing out, having one person blow over and cost extra money every month. So and it added tethering. It, you know, it's I guess I'm the ideal AT&T customer in that sense.
Oh, so with the family share, you do get tethering built in?
You get tethering, and you get unlimited texts, and you get unlimited calls, and then the data, you pick an amount of data that you sip from, and everybody shares that.
And plus, you'll get the FaceTime over 3G too.
That's what I understand. I mean, we haven't tested it yet, but to be honest, we don't use FaceTime that often anyway.
Well, neither do we. So that was kind of the thing is, and the running theme has become in this, as I've been talking to a bunch of different people about this, is, and I came to my own conclusion when I was doing my research, is that it really is very specific to anybody's given situation in terms of how frequently they upgrade devices, how many people they have on their plan, how much actual data usage they have, how much, you know. So I've been reading all these articles where they're trying to answer the question, who has the best data plan? And I've just been telling people, I don't think you can really even ask that question or give that answer. It's very individualized in terms of how it breaks out, who the best carrier is, what the best data plan is, what the best voice plan is, what the best texting plan, you know, it's very specific.
Well, you know, it's weird. As consumers, there are certain companies you deal with that you just feel an affinity toward. And I'm going to skip the obvious example, you know, and go with one that's less obvious, my dry cleaner. Nice people. You go in there, they always remember my name. When I ask them for something that I need in a hurry, they always do it. You just feel like they're in there with you. And as a result, I've used that for, I don't know, 20 years. And then you look at other companies and there's no loyalty. And that is, to me, the cellular carriers. I mean, I don't feel like they have any loyalty towards me, and I have none towards them. And, you know, it's just an uncomfortable relationship that we both need to be in, apparently. Cool. They need my money and I need their help. But it's just there's no loyalty. And I don't way towards Verizon or AT&T or whoever, you know. I just think you just got to deal with it.
Well, you bought your upgrade, right? And you stayed with AT&T. So check your email, because I got this letter, this form letter, and I use that in air quotes, from the Vice President General Manager for AT&T in San Diego, thanking me for continuing to use their service and talking about how they've been building out their 4G network. And I know it's token and dumb, but it still makes you kind of feel good, like, they're giving the impression that they care.
Yeah, I know where I live, they've been putting some new antennas online near my home, and I get a text message every time another one goes up.
Yeah.
Which is, that's kind of cool, I guess. I mean, like I said, I haven't had much trouble with AT&T. The worst time for me for AT&T is when I attend Macworld every year, and then it just doesn't work, it seems like.
Well, for me, I mean, you went to the family, you're in the position to go to the family share plan, so those kind of make sense to a certain degree. The place I think AT&T is falling down for a lot of people, and where I wouldn't recommend it again, would be someone who's an individual and kind of wants to get the most bang for their buck, because they're not doing in an affordable plan, unlimited text isn't included. They're not including the data tethering like Verizon is. So Verizon has some nice advantages when you're on sort of some of their single plans, that I think you know, I don't know why AT&T is still doing the whole nickel and diming thing when both Sprint and Verizon seem to be including a lot more with your base coverage. I think their base plans are slightly more expensive, but not proportionally when you add on the additional services you need to the AT&T plans to bring them in line. So it's all very confusing to consumers, and I think they need to simplify it at some point. I think that was kind of what some of the share plans are about, but again, those don't kind of fit all people.
I think listeners should take notes, because we're going to be able to tell these stories to our grandkids about how weird it was, because at some point there's going to be, I mean, in my mind at least, that there's going to be some type of all prevalent Wi-Fi technology where delivering data becomes just ridiculously easy and inexpensive.
Yeah.
And all this nonsense will go away.
Yeah.
Can't get here soon enough.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Ubiquitous, yeah. Wi-Fi will probably be, you know, some sort of ubiquitous Wi-Fi thing. It'll be where it ends up probably, but we're a ways off.
But remember when cell phones first started and the data rates were like, it was crazy. You know, if you called for 5 minutes, it was like, you know, $30 or something.
True. Yeah, the voice now, minutes were insane. Yeah, so, very good point. So just in general, on the iPhone, I mean, again, you and I are in this weird situation where we're probably going to upgrade for podcast reasons, for other reasons, but just in general impressions of the hardware updates and things like that. I mean, I'm kind of excited to get the new phone with the new form factor and larger screen and stuff like that. Is there any particular thing with respect to the design or features that you're interested in checking out?
You know, I really think the best designed iPhone was the first one. I loved the feel of that aluminum back. Yeah. And I always felt like the 3G was a step down. It felt, you know, plasticky to me, you know, it was, and for good reason. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this feels in my hand. I don't know. I mean, like I said, you know, I'm definitely an Apple guy, so I'm going to be getting a new one every year, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm glad that they're not like following the market in sense of making these really big phones. So I mean, I wear, you know, suit pants. I think Dr. Drang did a post on this week that I thought was funny, but it's just true. I mean, when you wear dress pants, it definitely shows up in your pocket, so you don't want it overly large. And
longer is better, okay. Right?
Yeah. Did we just say that? So it's really good. I'm looking forward to playing with it. It looks like the initial impressions by people who I know and respect are that it's a really nice phone. You know, people who've actually had their hands on one. So it's going to be fun. You know, every year it's fun. I mean, I just think it continues to get better every year. I really liked the iPhone 4 design. And I'm looking forward to feeling this one in my hand. I mean, like the 3G design, I was ready for it to go.
Yeah.
This iPhone 4, I still like it. So
yeah, I like mine.
It'll be interesting to see what the new one feels like.
Did you? I'm assuming you pre-ordered, but
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I stayed up till midnight, which is tough because I get up early. But I saw on Twitter everybody was buying them through the app, so I just did that, and it was just really easy. Just tap through. The easy only hang up I saw. And did you do it that way too?
Yeah, I guess the only downside, a couple people had mentioned that for whatever reason, even though the option seemed like it was there, the app wasn't letting you switch carriers if you were switching carriers. Some people had some trouble with that, but otherwise it went very smooth.
I'll tell you where I got hung up was I always buy the Apple Care Plus. Mm-hmm. I mean, because, you know, I'm just always panicked. I don't put my phone in a case, but I always pay the $100 for the super insurance, and I figure that's like the cost of a good case. And that way, if I drop it or, you know, it goes swimming or something, I get a new one without any worries. I couldn't figure out how to do it through the app. Hmm. I saw the option where it described it, but I never saw something that says, click here to buy this.
Right. I think there was some confusion over the dock adapter too, that the lightning to 30 pin adapter being included or not included. And I guess it's ultimately come out that it isn't included. Although in some cases during checkout, it seemed to imply that it was included in the box.
And so I'm going to, I did look into this, and if you get a new phone and you're supposed to buy that at the time of purchase, but within the 30 days, according to the website, you can make a Genius Bar appointment and bring it in. They can look at it to make sure it's not already wrecked. And assuming this, you can buy the insurance. So,
yeah. They're usually pretty good about that. You could probably go on online now after the fact, even add it on, I bet, or no?
I don't know. I haven't played with it. You know, it's like I feel like I got an order in. I have a delivery date. I don't want to mess with anything. Yeah. You know?
Well, there's also, then there's always third party options too, you know?
So. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, cool.
Apple Care Plus. I think that's a good program. And I just like the convenience of going to the Apple store.
Yeah. Always good. All right. Well, anything else? I guess I've asked a couple people about some of the other announcements. If you want to know how you feel about the new iPods or the Nano.
They look great. I mean, I don't know. I don't use them, so
yeah.
I'm not qualified to really talk about it, but it looks, yeah. I think the iPod Touch needed, I was not a fan of the mirrored back of the old iPod Touch.
Yeah.
It's like they got rid of that, which is nice.
Yeah. Well, the upgraded cameras, I think, are the big deal there. You know, yeah. It finally has proper cameras and the screen. I mean, it's basically the iPhone 4 now, or the iPhone 5, excuse me, without the phone bits. I mean, literally almost.
Well, one of my non-geek friends is like really excited that you can use an iPod Touch like a camera and have a strap on it. I mean, she wants to get one. She's telling me she has an iPhone. I know. I'm like, why would you want it? You've got it has a strap. She's like really excited about that, you know? So they're definitely pushing buttons of people that are, you know, not in our realm with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm excited for next week. I can't wait to get my hands on this thing and play around with it. You know, it's a nice hardware upgrade, I think. And really, I think the software is going to really be what makes it shine. On top of that, you know, the iOS 6 stuff.
I mean, this, we're kind of preaching to the choir, right? But
right.
Yeah, when they come out with a new iPhone, a bunch of people complain about how it's not amazing enough, and then they sell out within hours. And why? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I think there's a mistake where people, you know, because Apple once in a while does something that just completely, you know, blows your mind, like release the iPad 1, the original iPad, or the original iPhone, you know, they do something just remarkable. And people have this expectation that every year they're going to do that over again. But that's really not what they do. I mean, right? They come out with something remarkable, but then they just start steadily improving upon
it. Reiterating on it, yeah. Just making it better and better and better. No, there's definitely enough here to keep us happy for a while, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know if you read Gabe Weatherhead over at Mac Drifter did a really good post on NFC, which made a lot of sense to me about why nobody should care.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen his piece and read it, but that, I mean, going into this, that was my opinion, too, that Apple really doesn't need to do NFC. I'm convinced they're going to do something with extending Passbook and using your iTunes account as like the repository for, you know, having money in an account that you can take in and out of, sort of like PayPal, you know, or just go right to your bank account or your credit card through that account. I mean, look at what they're doing with their App Store app. And I think if they made that available to retailers, you know, the app that you can use in the store where I can pick something off the shelf, scan it and walk out. If they can push that across the board on retail with the iPhone, why do they need NFC?
Yeah, and it's going to get better and easier. And I'm sure that, I mean, if you and I are thinking this, they probably have teams of people working on it. So they just got to get there.
Yep. Yep. I don't think that's the killer feature. I think Siri and some of the other stuff is the killer stuff. Well, Dave, thanks for chatting for a little bit. What's going on over at Mac Power Users these days?
We're still just making great shows and having a lot of fun. You got to go check it out.
Check it out. Dave's on Mac Power Users with Katie Floyd. Anything else going on that you want to mention?
You know what? Today, the new update to Paperless came out, version 1.2. New screencasts, whole bunch of changes.
Oh, cool. That's the ebook.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of fun when you can make a book and then update it.
So do I get that update since I bought a copy?
Yeah. Just delete it from your iPad and go to the iBook store and re-download it, and you get all the goodness.
Awesome. I'm going to have to go check that out. Thanks again, David.
Thanks, Adam.
So there you go. Some thoughts and impressions on these new products from couple other folks in the Mac community. I want to thank David and Ewan and Dave Hamilton for coming on and chatting with us. I like to have these conversations with some of my friends in the Apple community, because I think it's one of the best ways that you can sort of wrap your head around all this stuff. It's so overwhelming when Apple does these big events to me now, just the sheer volume of stuff that they're bringing out. And especially with the iPhone, you've got all these carrier considerations and these different model considerations that you have to work through. And just chatting about that stuff with some friends can really help clear your mind and sort of let you see things maybe that you didn't notice and stuff like that. So that's what the MacCast really to me is all about, is just reaching out to the community and helping each other out. And so hopefully we did that in this episode for you. You're part of the conversation as well, of course. So please give your thoughts and impressions. Send me audio comments. Send me email feedback. I want to hear from you. Also, when these devices start arriving in the next week, 2 weeks, coming months, depending upon what countries you're in, please also give us your impressions when you receive the devices and actually get to touch and feel and hold them and start playing around with them. Of course, we're going to be always doing that on future episodes of the MacCast, so we'll just keep enjoying this stuff that Apple delivers us. But man, some great announcements, some great new products, I think, coming our way, and it sounds like there's more to come. In a couple weeks, we might have some new iPads to be talking about as well. So it's exciting times. It's a fun time to be a Mac fan and Apple fan, and I'm really looking forward to it. But I think that's going to do it for today. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors. Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. You can check out their software, get more information and details, and also be sure to check out their new app, iTrash, over at circusponies.com. Smile Software, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disk Label, Text Expander Touch for the iOS devices, and PDF Pen for iPad. You can get more information and details on all of their great products over at smilesoftware.com. Gazelle, hey, if you're planning on buying a new iPhone 5, a new iPod, and you want to get a little cash to maybe help subsidize that purchase, you can do that very easily over at gazelle.com. Just within a couple clicks, you'll get an offer, and you can see what your old devices were. So check that out. And when you get that new device, that new iPhone, the new iPod, you can protect it with a great warranty from SquareTrade. It's going to protect you from drops. It's going to protect you from spills, even full immersion underwater. And the plans are very affordable, just $99 right now. And you can get information on that by going to squaretrade.com/MacCast. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the show. Big thank you to you for your support of the show. I have one thing to tell you about. Next month, I am going to be speaking again at the Mac Computer Expo in Petaluma. That's on October 6th. You can still get tickets. They're available. Just head over to maccomputerexpo.com to get all of the details, but they're an awesome deal. Just $10. And I'd love to see you there. It's a great event. Lots of great Mac Apple folks are speaking over there. So check out the full list and information and details over at maccomputerexpo.com. Keep your emails, your audio comments coming. I love hearing from you. I want to hear your feedback about these new products and just get your thoughts and impressions. You can send those to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM9, and leave a voicemail there. Also, be sure to check out the website. There you'll find show notes with links to everything that I talked about on this or every other episode of the MacCast. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, and also on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMacCast. That's it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.